Good evening, welcome. We're gonna start. This is the June 9, 2014 Glen Ellyn School District 41 Board of Education regular meeting. The time is 7:31. Call the meeting to order. Mr. Kenwood, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante.
Here.
Mr. Kenwood.
Here.
Mr. Alger.
Here.
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 Here. We are going to change our agenda just slightly in that we're going to move up a discussion item, that being the policy 2110 discussion, the qualification term duties of board officers. We want to make a statement now before we get into the discussion that Board Vice President John Kenwood will fulfill the terms of the presidency through the end of what would have been my term, which would be until May 2015. In working through all the procedures related to my resignation, the board learned through our legal counsel that our policy may be out of sync or different from the Illinois School Code. So the board will ask the policy committee to include policy 2110 in the list of matters to be reviewed in the future. If the policy committee has any changes to recommend, those changes would not affect Mr. Kenwood's succession to fulfill the terms of the presidency. So in other words, to be clear, and we're going to talk about this momentarily, any changes to this policy would be prospective in the future after the new elections in the spring. So with that, we're going to go to the discussion item, the board policy procedure revisions, the first reading of the policy 2110, which is qualifications, terms, and duties of board officers. As I said before, Mr. Kenwood will assume the duties of the board presidency consistent with the current board policy. If any changes to the policy are recommended by the policy committee, they would not affect him in performance of his duties in fulfilling the duties of the presidency. Do I have board consensus to move the discussion of the policy 2110 to the policy committee for review? I think at this point we need to have a discussion, and if we could reach some consensus, then we will act accordingly.
Just a question. When
sure.
John moves the president next meeting on the 23rd, probably when he does it, correct? We're going to need to elect a vice president at that time.
Well.
And how does that work, just so I understand?
Well.
That is outlined in the current policy.
That's a
policy. That one is clearly outlined.
Yeah, that's a policy.
Well, I was just about to say, I don't agree with that, but as a policy committee member, I just want to give my opinion.
So what do you think should happen with the vice president?
I think our policy, as it's written, reads that if there's a vacancy in the board presidency, which there will be, the vice president, who's Mr. Kenwood, would remain the vice president, but he would assume the duties of the presidency for the remainder of the president's term.
Who'd give the pledge then?
Well, that's up to Mr. Kenwood to decide that.
I can't let go of the pledge.
Okay.
So the way the policy is written, it reads that way.
Okay, there, I can see that.
There would be no need for any other elections, no need for any action by the current board until the board reorganizes itself.
So if John's not here, then who's the pro tem? Goes down the road to the secretary?
By policy, it's the board secretary.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
That's assuming everyone agrees.
Why do you think that, Seth? Why do you think that there should not be a vice presidency role?
There's two specific.
Because we have a by defined by what we have in our policy, a reason to have a vice president. And they're segregated.
I agree. Page two, this is reading from our current policy, not the any other policy, but our current policy. The qualification terms duties of board officers. The president has 10 enumerated duties, and then at the end of that section, the vice president says, the sentence says, the vice president fills a vacancy in the presidency. That's it. Then you go to the vice president, and there's 3 enumerated duties, and the last sentence of that section says, a vacancy in the vice presidency is filled by a special board election. So my reading of that is that if the school code and wanted the presidency filled by a special election, then they would have written that clearly, because you can't get any more clear than that.
But when John takes over president, he doesn't vacate the vice presidency, because if he did, then the last sentence would be, a vacancy in the vice presidency is filled by a special election.
Right, there's nothing written in here that says the vice president becomes the president.
So what you're saying is John doesn't become the president?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying John remains the vice president.
And becomes a pro tem.
Performs the duties of the presidency until the next election. So therefore, there's no need for a special election to fill the vice presidency, because John is technically
still the vice president. So what you're saying is the presidency post is not filled.
Correct.
John just assumes all the roles of vice
president. The duty.
Performs the duties of the presidency. Right.
I can see that.
I mean, that's my reading. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. But
no, thank you. It shows the need that the future boards
can make it more clear. When you pressure test a policy like this is why I think we need to go back and align, look at those two pieces, and why council sent us what they sent us too.
Well, I think if you go to, I mean, Sam and I have discussed this, and the interpretation, leaves that. And I think if you go to the Illinois School Board of Associations, they have taken that step to say that the vice president fills the vacancy, and then they go a step further to say that there should be an election, I believe, for the vice president. And then the Illinois School Council of Attorneys, I believe, has a similar interpretation. So I think this is based on school code, and Illinois School Board Association, they have just taken it to another level to probably fill what might be perceived as an ambiguity in the school code. That's my interpretation.
The only difference I would say in that, and I don't want to monopolize the conversation by any means, but the AASB, the Illinois Association of School Boards, their service, the press service, who provides us and all the other members of the School Board Association with sample policies. They have general counsel, assistant general counsel, and staff. And that's all they do. Interpret school code, write policies, and give those policies to member school districts like us. And the only thing I differ with you, John, is their form policy, for lack of a better way to say it, is exactly our policy the way it's written now. Our attorneys have suggested a change in the policy, and that's fine. But the way the policy is written today, recommended by the attorneys from the Illinois School Board Association, is what I think I just...
That's right, because when we served up together, this was the press policy that came through.
Right.
The only discrepancy I hear is this last line under vice president, which is a vacancy in the vice presidency, is filled by special board election, which is, I think, what you're bringing up or what someone's bringing up, which is this board. When I read that, it's this board. It's a board election elected by fellow board members.
Right. I agree with that, but I would differ that in that in if the situation was different, I wasn't leaving, but John or any vice president was leaving. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's very clear that if the vice president leaves, then there'll be a special election to fill that position. Mm-hmm. But since the president is leaving, that doesn't apply here, I would argue. and the provisions in the presidency section would apply.
Because the way we're interpreting it is that the vice president assumes the performs the duties. I won't say
right.
assumes, but performs the duties of president. So in essence, we're reading there's not a vacancy per se, but a performance of presidential duties until the following spring when we have elections and move forward.
Right.
I think somewhat the spirit is, you know, they like to have positions elected every 2 years. It rotates on a, you know, pretty specific, it's either a 2 year or 1 year. These sort of mid-interim elections mm-hmm. can create something that's different than the spirit of what they were looking for, and also can lead to a lot of discussions around who should be where and what. So, but I think that's something the policy committee would need to look at mm-hmm. and determine whether that's right or wrong. It all hinges on the definition of, you know, fills the vacancy, performs the duties,
right.
and all those things.
So does the secretary, I'm just trying to walk this through. Does the secretary then have the right to delegate some of all of his duties should the vice president not be there? Because the secretary has that role.
Well, if the president...
We don't have a president anymore. We have a vice president assuming presidential duties.
Yeah, I think the way the policy read is that it's either sometimes it's the secretary or sometimes it's the most senior board member, depending on the situation.
So we have to have an interpretation of that rule now, then, too.
Well,
My question is if you're not here, mm-hmm. can Dean delegate presidential duties to someone else? According to this, he can.
Yeah, I think he is. I do think he is the one that sits in the seat at that time.
And he can delegate all presidential duties to someone else.
If
well,
he can't run the meeting, I hear what you're saying. Like, this is like a domino effect.
Right.
So John might be traveling, or John might be in a family situation, can't call in by law. Dean's in the same situation. Then we still have a quorum. And so those duties then get referred.
I mean, it does say the secretary may delegate some or all of these duties, but the duties that this policy is referring to is 1 through 9
are
secretary specific, right.
So, yeah.
Which is why I wonder if this idea of a vacancy in the vice president is filled by board election is important, because if there is a time when John is not around and we have an empty spot, for lack of a better description, then, you know, we may have a gap in the ability to...
Now, the current language that you interpret, that he doesn't take your seat but just your duties, is the vice president fills a vacancy in the presidency.
Right.
So you're interpreting that he doesn't actually become the president because it just fills a vacancy.
Well, right, and also in the vice president's section, that the vice president performs the duties of the president if, and one, the office of the president is vacant, and that's what it will be.
I gotcha. That's you going down to that first bullet point.
Correct.
Okay. Not because later it says absent, which
means mm-hmm. Well, I'd also be absent, but...
But no, I know, but the vacant is what overrides, is what your argument is. That bullet point backs it up.
Yes.
Gotcha. I understand. It's counter to that statement above. The vice president fills a vacancy in the office of the president. That makes you believe that he actually takes a seat of the president and is the president.
I mean, you could interpret that.
Yes, you can.
But your point's right. Then you read down below.
Right.
So that, I mean, it's almost like that point should never have been in here. The first bullet point.
Well, if
what does the first bullet point mean? The second one's if he's absent. Mm-hmm. The third one's if you're unable to perform.
Yeah, and also if the sentence of vacancy in the vice presidency is filled by a special board election,
right.
If that wasn't there, then I would interpret the statement the vice president fills a vacancy in the presidency to mean the vice president will become the president.
Because it doesn't say that.
And it doesn't say that specifically, and so I
don't think it says it specifically, but I think that when you read this, when I read this, I assumed that John should be the president. And that in that same paragraph it says, and after it tells you when he should assume those duties, the very next line is a vacancy in the vice presidency is filled by special board election. So it seems to be saying that, by the way, if the vice president is going to step into one of these dots, you're going to end up now having to replace the vice president. So I think you can make a reasonable argument either way. And if we were to do that, we can solve the problem that you were talking about, the vice presidency, because we can make John the president. We can just elect a vice president. We don't have to do anything with the secretary. And we move on and we have a nice full board until the next election.
I mean, you could do that, and I won't be around to stand in your way to do that. But, I mean, if
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. But I think an argument can be made that by the fact that they're putting it all together in there, that maybe there's an intent, maybe a poorly worded intent, to say that John should become the president, the vice president should become the president, and then you have an opening. And then to fill that opening, it isn't someone appointed, we should just have an election for vice president. And that, to me, seems to make sense. And certainly, when you look at what the policy in front of us states, it looks like that. And this policy happens to look an awful lot like District 87, Glenbard. I went out and looked at their policy today, and theirs looks a lot like the one that's being presented to us. So it seems like they've maybe gone through this, too, and come up with this. And I think the whole point is to make sure that we have the roles filled going forward so that we don't have ambiguity. And even here, we've got seven people using up 18 minutes of the meeting so far trying to figure out who's going to be the role. So I think maybe as a board, we could probably clear this up by interpreting it and voting on it. Voting John to be the president, you know, I think tomorrow at 5:01, because your resignation is at 5 o'clock.
Correct.
And then we wouldn't, we get rid of the ambiguity. And then we come back on 23rd and just somebody takes a vice president role.
Mm-hmm. You could do that, but it's still 87, I'm not 100% sure, so maybe I shouldn't even say that. I think 87 is represented by the same council as
correct
we are. Mm-hmm. So it's not a stretch that 87's policy looks a lot like the policy that's being offered by our council.
Right, I'm saying it's just another example of it. It's you know, that somebody else has adopted this policy and somebody very close to us.
And that would be two out of the entire state, but
have you looked at all the other ones?
Yeah, we don't know that.
Well, you're right, I don't.
No, I mean, I've looked at other ones, and most of them have the policy that we have in place. Mm-hmm.
But why wouldn't you want to elect the president? I mean, that's what I'm trying to understand.
My question is, why would you want to have all the roles filled just because you're out of pocket.
I'm a little concerned about a gap in the VP role.
Yeah, I think Sam is just saying that's his interpretation.
Yeah, because I sure would feel better if we just were very clear in that you're going to hold the presidency, and then we just find another member to be a vice president.
Mm-hmm. And that's a fair interpretation. But I think you've got to go through the process.
That's what we're talking about doing.
What process is that?
Go through the policy committee.
The policy committee is for this. For what we need to do now under our current policy is what we're discussing.
So I think what you're saying is you want to put a motion on the table to elect Mr. Kenwood as the president, not filling the vacancy.
No motion. But we can't. There's just an assumption of policy.
I'm just telling you the next steps. If we were to follow this logic, you would have to make a motion.
Yes.
Somebody would second it, and then you would put it on the table again to say, this is what we're looking for.
I don't think we should do that, because then you're saying, and if you're making a motion, then you're inferring that there's an opportunity of option.
Right.
If you just say, per policy, John's president, there's no motion, there's no option. That's the way it works.
And once he's president, you go down to the vice president, there's a vacancy. So
and that's much cleaner.
You're just interpreting it differently than how Sam's interpreting is what you're saying. Okay. You have consensus amongst the board that you're interpreting it differently. Either way, there has to be some kind of consensus. There has to be some conversation about where you're going.
Well, we want to have a president. And so we can do that, and then we can...
Well, we really want a vice president, because the way this is set up is we don't have...
Well, we're missing a vice president.
You're missing a role.
Yeah, but I really want both. So.
Yeah.
You got to make a commitment.
Yeah.
Actually, if you want, we can make it a package deal. You can be the secretary.
So...
Short straw.
Well, when I... last thing, and then you guys can take over. What I would suggest then is if that's the way you want to go, then I would refer to the policy committee. Two meetings later, you could have the new policy in place with the exact language that you want to do. You want to have an election for the presidency.
We don't want to have an election for the presidency. With respect to Joe.
Well, then you can change the...
We just want to follow this policy.
By interpreting,
and we're interpreting it different than you are.
Yeah, we're interpreting
the only difference in interpretation is that the leaving the vice presidency role empty, for some of us are saying for this last time.
Yeah.
I'll speak for myself. I see as a concern to leave that gap. So as John takes over to perform the duties, which I think we have consensus on,
yes.
Then our next meeting at the end of the month, we can have, per what this reads, vacancy in the vice presidency is filled by special board.
So now you would have a vacancy.
Then we would then elect a VP to take over for that last portion out of John's term.
And then we come back in the fall.
Right. And then the policy committee, which will need to reform, you know, that John will have to help us reform with another person, can take on looking at Illinois school code vis-a-vis IASB policy press, which is what we have, and then talk about that whole other, it's a whole other conversation.
And that's fine, because I'm not going to be a part of that conversation, so it's...
But I'll call you.
All right, so to kind of summarize then, the board has consensus to follow the interpretation that John becomes the president, and that there's a need, that now there's a vacancy in the vice presidency, and there has to be a special election, and there's consensus that we'll have that election at the next regularly scheduled board meeting, June 23rd. Is that fair to say?
Correct.
You summarize the model?
I think it's the 23rd.
It's the 23rd.
What did I say?
You said the 25th, Mr. President.
You only get that from
me. I think I said the 23rd. Well, in any event, that's what...
He was thinking the 23rd.
Okay. All right. Okay, now we'll jump back to the regular agenda. Public participation. Is there anyone here tonight that would want to... I'm kidding. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. Mrs. Stecker, you can call the first name, please.
Rita Colorado. My name is Rita Colorado. I'm a parent of a third grader at Unton School. I'd like to speak on the issue of internet safety and usage. In the district's zeal to provide the latest technology to all students, I feel this is an area in which the cart has been placed before the horse. I note the district moves quickly to implement a whitelisted website system and comprehensive written internet policy for the school campuses in the fall. The same week the porn viewing incident in Forest Glen was reported, there was an incident in my son's literacy classroom. Teen classes were studying human bodies and, as a result, a student Googled various body parts. I'm unsure what information the search yielded, but the child received a think about it sheet. This was an innocent Google search that yielded unintended websites and disciplinary consequences. It could have been worse. Let's talk about parental responsibility. In this case, any of our children could have stumbled into this scenario given the nature of their studies. A child's behavior was labeled as bad when he was doing the very thing the district encourages him to do, to use the internet to research information. There are two problems with CART launch access to the internet at the elementary school age, even with a comprehensive filter system, which we now know isn't foolproof. First, that some searches, innocent or not, yield information that is problematic at best. In the Forest Glen case, developmentally damaging as well. And second, that children of this age are incapable of distinguishing between valuable, informative websites and pure junk. It's one thing when there's individual oversight, but with a 1 to 25 student to teacher ratio, individual monitoring is an impossibility and an undue burden. An internet search often produces websites that contain misinformation, hate speech, racist comments, the list goes on. And some websites can be poorly written to boot. The educational value is lost if websites are not curated for this age group. A Google search in and of itself will not further their knowledge base. The district also needs a written internet policy that parents must abide by before we allow children to bring their own devices to use at school, and a limit on where and when children can use such. One parent's version of what is appropriate might not be so, and it is still the district's responsibility to ensure safety and appropriateness while these devices are used on school grounds. At Lincoln School, there's clear policies on children not wearing clothing with guns or gore, for example, and they aren't allowed to bring fake weapons for the Halloween parade. Yet we have no written policy for what is allowed on a student's private electronic device that they may bring to school. Parents need guidance in this area. I consider myself fairly vigilant, but I'm behind the curtain as well in securing my own family or my capabilities. We all need to do better by our children. Education needs to be the driving force here, not just technology for technology's sake.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rita.
Just a little bit on that. I mean, obviously, it's a very serious issue, and I know that the district and the administration is taking it very seriously. So I guess I would ask folks to be patient, and I know it's hard. I'm a parent as well. I know it's hard to be patient, but I would ask parents to be patient about it, and I would expect there would be significant changes, updates, corrections, whatever you want to say, in the fall. Sorry, go ahead, Maureen.
Pam Kelleher. Hi, I'm Pam Kelleher, and I'm also talking about technology, but mine's just a little bit different, so I think when you're making a list, it should be good so that we get them all. I speak to you as a mother and a teacher and a tutor for kids in all the schools in District 41. I currently have children, a child at Lincoln, a child at Hadley, somebody at West, and I'm at Bennett Forest Glen, and I'm going to Churchill.
So you got them covered.
Going on everywhere, and the policy is different at every school. Things are being handled differently in every building. So they definitely need to get together and come up with something. D41, not that I spoke with D41, where everybody's doing the same thing, because it's not the same at all. I am sympathetic to the challenge of keeping up with the internet and social media. We all know that it's difficult and know what you're doing. But, you know, not just the pornography issue, it's issues with everything on these computers. And the biggest thing that I would say is that I think some of the usage is not, the teachers are not using the technology for purpose all the time. It's being used to keep kids busy. You're done with something, get on and do Odyssey. You're done with something, get on and do that. Those things are fabulous. They have their place. But I think the teachers are so overwhelmed. I'm a teacher, I get it. We're not using it for purpose. We're not thinking about what is my project? What is the thing I want my kid to get from this? Do I need to use the internet or the iPad for this? I mean, we can do a lot of stuff at home. We can research at home where parents are then responsible for what their kids are doing. Doesn't help to all be done there. So I think a little bit more purpose on what we're doing would be really helpful. The other thing I was just appalled about was two of my kids, so two different schools, were given free tech day a couple weeks ago. I couldn't even believe I was reading this from a teacher. We have a million things going on in this district with the technology problems, and teachers are telling my kids to bring their iPad to school and have a free day. Okay, both my kids were told no. I told I was doing this parent at first. They went to school with nothing, came home, and what they told me, Instagram, texting high school kids during class, showing images on their phones. Now, it's not the school, but why does a K-8 kid need their phone during the day? I'm in support of phone in the backpack. I want my kid to be able to call me if they can't get home. They don't need it during the day. And you can't blame the kids. They can't help it. So you got to take it away. You guys cannot control what happens on the phone during a free tech day. Nobody has any idea what's going on. I mean, it was horrible. But I think as a school, how was that even allowed? So I just think maybe the schools as a whole need to come up with something that they're all agreeing together. Because as I said, being in all these schools, it's all different. So I think those are my biggest things that you guys really need to think about.
Thanks, Ben.
I came here tonight to speak on a subject that is totally unnecessary at the present moment, but I will highlight a couple of things that just so that it doesn't go unsaid. In the last meeting, there was mention by Mr. Kenwood of we have all talked about the board succession issue. That lends itself to all kinds of hearsay and conjecture as to what is going on, who's talking about what, where. What I would say is that the past history in this district with the district boards has been suspect a few times or questionable a few times as to whether information is disseminated after already having discussed it in closed session or amongst yourselves. So I would say I applaud you all for coming to the policy decision that you came to tonight in regards to this session. I think you have read it correctly. I will save my comments for whether it should go into policy committee for you all to decide. I don't sit on the board. So my last item was that amongst some of the other issues of school building projects, teacher training, questionable think tank initiatives, much better financial stewardship, preparation for a possible building referendum request, and the reparation of a very tainted reputation in the community for transparency and trustworthiness are just some of the more important issues I think need to be on the table than to be discussing for 2-3 months as to whether or not we are following the letter of the policy command to bring the proper person to the board presidency and have the vice presidency position filled. So I would say that, albeit I applaud the decision that you read it correctly, I believe, I would also applaud you if this discussion had come out prior to tonight.
So, thank you.
Thanks, Laura Grabowski. Hi, I'm Laura Grabowski. This is my first board meeting and first time I've spoken in front of the board, so thank you for having me. I'm also here to talk about internet safety for our kids. I have a child at Lincoln, and I also have twins that are graduating tomorrow from Hadley, and they'll be going to West. And I'm so glad you brought up that this is happening at all the schools, because that's what I'm here to tell you, that this is a big problem at Hadley as well. I thought that the kids weren't supposed to have handheld devices at Hadley. That was the rule that they were told also, but there are many teachers there that are allowing the kids to bring in their iPod Touch, their iPhones, and allowing the kids to, instead of participating in school activities, to do other things like Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, all of that. That's a big concern of mine, so I'm here as a concerned Hadley parent to tell you that. I also think that before the start of school in the fall, not in the fall, but before the start of school in the fall, that we kindly request that something is put into action before then, such as providing age-appropriate internet access for these kids, enforcing the policies of internet usage in all of the schools, every single one of them, especially Hadley in my case, and mostly holding District 41 IT group responsible and accountable for monitoring the internet usage, which, from what I've been told, hasn't been done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jennifer Rath. Hi, I was going to speak about policy too. As you can see, I changed up all my notes with the discussion. So, suffice to say, I still have a couple questions about the council and why policy was listed as in the first place. Granted, Mr. Black was leaving, but when I went back and looked at the notes, it was reviewed in February of 2013 and it was approved. So I'm not sure how vetted it was back then. I thought maybe you did that to prevent situations like this. I'm not sure if there was some insinuation that you might need new counsel, because looking at all the changes to this policy, I'm basically wondering how many billable hours there were for this. But I'm going to switch gears to the technology and piggyback off of what a couple other Lincoln moms said. My daughter had free tech day last week as well, and she had a substitute teacher in her classroom. I believe it was the 18th time this year the teacher had been pulled for meetings, which is, you know, more than 3 weeks of school.
The substitute security was basically if somebody had their handheld device, she just told them, don't look at each other's screens. Focus on your own screens. And I don't think that's the right message that we need to be sending to our kids.
Thanks, Jen.
Kevin Rath.
Y'all stole my thunder with the board discussion about policy, but I will say if the board's attorney, actually thought of this first, then the board should consider finding new counsel. This was another epic failure on the part of your legal advisor to give you bad advice. This is wasting everyone's time, and worse yet, it's a waste of tax dollars. If you don't consider looking for a new lawyer, then I think we should consider a petition for a board member resignation.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Liz Rutting. I'm a Glen Allen resident. I have three children, 9, 13, and 15. I'm also the founder and owner of Cyber Safety Consulting, and I'm passionate about the safety of our children on the Internet. Here's an analogy. When your child is 2 or 3 years old, did any of you let your child go to the park alone? Probably not. I hope not. We didn't do it because we wanted to keep them safe of the dangers out there, the predators. They didn't know how to keep them safe, so what we did as parents is we walked them to the park, and as we walked them to the park, we talked to them about what they should be aware of. We educated them. As they got older, we let them walk to school in a group, or maybe with a friend. We continued to protect them, but we started to allow them a bit of freedom. And best of all, our schools partnered with us in that effort. They had crossing guards at busy corners. And you took attendance at the beginning of the day to make sure all kids got their safety and were accounted for. Now we have this whole Internet world that our children are playing on. They face many of the same dangers on the Internet that they face as a small child in the park. However, we as parents are not as passionate about keeping them safe in this world. We hand them devices, phones, computers, iPads, eye touches, with minimal education and minimal supervision. Most adults, whether parents, teachers, or administrators, cannot keep up with the speed that the children move in the Internet. As a result, we are highly uninvolved in their online life. The dangers they face are many, and today, here, it's the viewing of pornography. Tomorrow, it could be cyberbullying, involvement with an online predator, sexting, or overexposure. And as I've listened to some of the parents already, I'm sure some of these things happen on Technology Day. The issues are really serious, and the consequences to the kids are many times life-altering. We can't protect our children on the Internet until we as parents and administrators and teachers truly understand the dangers and how they arise, as well as take the time to understand the technology. This is a challenge. This is the challenging part, but it's critical. People, parents, teachers, administrators are busy and intimidated by this issue. They also think that it would never happen to their child, not my child. Do you know that 50% of children are experiencing cyberbullying? And conversely, 50% of children are the cyberbullies. According to Crimes Against Children, 20% of teenagers who regularly log onto the Internet have received unwanted sexual solicitation via the web. The problem is prevalent and real, and this is the world our children in. This is the world our children live in, and it's not going away. The solution to the problem can't be one-dimensional. It can't be just putting in stronger web filters or whitelisting websites. It must be multi-dimensional, and education is the critical component. District 41 has a great opportunity. You guys have all these, a lot of people here, to take this issue and be a leader in safety in our school and for our children on the Internet.
I'm sorry, that's a lot of time. Could you summarize it and leave us your notes?
Sure. I believe that parents, teachers, and administrators, as well as the children, all need education in order to partner with you to keep the kids safe.
Thank you. Thanks for the information.
Lisa Miller. By the way, she has already conducted internet safety training at Ben Franklin for both parents and students. My name is Teresa Millich, and I'm the mother of a fourth grader at Forest Glen. And Dr. Gordon, my primary responsibility in life is to raise my children to be the best people that they can be. Recently, it became evident our children have been exposed to pornography at school, and this is unacceptable. Science is telling us how damaging pornography or exposure to pornography can be, and our schools cannot be the place where this damage occurs. And this is where we need your help, Dr. Gordon. Ours is a partnership and trust. We entrust to D41 our hard-earned tax dollars and trust that you will create a safe and productive learning environment for our children while in school, consistent with community standards. Since the incidents of children being exposed to pornography were reported, it appears the priority has been to minimize the story, cover the trail, rather than eliminate the sources of the problem. As a result, the environment of trust has been eroded. I like to propose, from here forward, a singular focus be given to eliminating the possibility this could ever happen again. Other nearby school districts, D15, D200, D89, have policies and tools to protect their elementary and middle school children, and we should have those policies and tools here in District 41. Common sense efforts, like prohibiting wireless devices with internet access on school grounds, actively monitoring internet activity for inappropriate uses, and use of whitelisted sites only, are needed to ensure our children have the best educational experience without exposing them to undue risk. And before any D41 student accesses a school computer, there should be education on the district's internet policy and training on appropriate and safe internet usage for all students, parents, teachers, principals, and administrators. D41 has chosen to provide parent-funded laptops to each student. It is your responsibility under the Children's Internet Protection Act to provide safeguards to ensure this equipment will not have access to anything other than what is needed for academic purposes. From the FCC's website regarding HIPAA requirements, and I quote, the protection measures must block or filter internet access to pictures that are obscene, child pornography, harmful to minors, and schools subject to HIPAA have two additional certification requirements. The internet safety policies must include monitoring the online activities of minors, and they must provide for educating minors about appropriate online behavior. You have a responsibility to rebuild broken trust in our partnership. We don't want excuses. We don't want stories about what happened. We want you to be a leader and communicate the specific actions D41 plans to take before school starts.
Teresa, that's
last
time.
Sentence. We need to be confident that our children will no longer be exposed to illicit material while in any D41 school. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Karen Harula.
Good evening. My name is Dr. Karen Harula, and I'm a professional psychologist on staff at Central DuPage Pastoral Counseling Center. I have 5 years' experience counseling children, teens, and families, and I've had the privilege of studying under Dr. William Struthers at Wheaton College, who has written a book on the impact of pornography use. In my experience, I have found that children who have used porn have a variety of reactions that include fear, curiosity, confusion, and disgust. What was once tricky, if not difficult, for children to access has now become available with a few clicks of the mouse. What the internet offers is referred to as the three A's: accessibility, affordability, and anonymity. While these seem great traits for academic and educational uses of the internet, it also applies to pornography. Whether intentionally or accidentally, children can easily find pornographic material while searching the internet for educational purposes. And our best research tells us that 1 in 4 children who have web access have accidental exposure to pornography, and that 8 to 10 kids ages 8 to 16 have viewed online porn. This school district has already acknowledged that new porn sites enter the internet every day, and many are designed to lure children through links posted on non-porn sites and through other innocent searches. These often offer free images and videos, and once the porn is seen, it can never be unseen. Children who are exposed to pornographic images before they are maturationally ready for understanding sexually explicit content can associate feelings of fear and disgust with their first sexual responses, which are elicited by pornography. Regular viewing of porn can distort the development of healthy relationships in the future, as porn removes sexuality from the relational context. In many arenas of life, our public institutions have taken a stand against things that interfere with the promise of safety and health. And just as you have a zero-tolerance policy for weapons and drugs and paraphernalia and lookalikes being brought into your schools, I believe you should take a similar stand where it pertains to children having the ability to access pornography while in pursuit of their education. Internet safety should be given no less attention or be considered any less important.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Even Osborne. Hi. I was asked to share a couple of my son's experiences that he's had at the school. My son's graduating 8th grade tomorrow, but has shared many details with me about the technology used of both Forrest Glen and Hadley. Not too long ago, my son was at homework club when he saw another kid viewing pornographic material on classroom computer. He came home and immediately told me what had happened and expressed how shocked he was. I'm lucky that I have a kid who comes home and tells me everything that happens at school. He has also told me about how the kids are sometimes allowed to play video games on the computers, not just Odyssey. These are outside video games, and that lots of kids play them even when they're not allowed to. He has mentioned numerous times that kids are sat in front of the computers to work, and their teacher goes back to his or her desk to work on something else. The teacher sometimes walks around, but really only if someone is goofing around. I'd like to know where the teachers are when all this is happening and why the school has not conceded that there is a widespread problem with their technology program. I understand the kids are curious and may see this type of graphic material, but to be able to view it at school is disturbing. I myself attended Churchill, Hadley, and Glenbard West when I was younger. Granted, we didn't have the technology that the kids have today, but I received a better education than my son is receiving. I believe my parents, who, by the way, are from two different countries, received a much better education than both my son and I received from District 41. I am also adamantly against the so-called grades given by the report cards, but that's another topic for another meeting. Other school districts utilize programs that when teachers put kids in front of the computers and go back to their desks, their computers show what each of the kids' computers are actually running, or better internet filters that only allow certain websites. Just like we as parents put parental controls on our TVs, computers, phones, etc., if the school district continues to offer computer and internet access to the kids, they must stay vigilant in their protection. In my opinion, technology is a tool to be used for educating our children, but it seems to have become more of a babysitter, and the school is relying too heavily on computers to educate our children. Bottom line is the school district must acknowledge the program, take responsibility, and correct the situation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Vanessa Lucas.
I have two kids at Forest Glen. I've got one that's graduating Hadley tomorrow. This is in regards to Forest Glen. I'm disappointed at the lack of responsibility left with the district. The district is taking for their role in this unsafe internet environment. I watched the PBL presentation this past Friday over at Forest Glen. I believe it is important for children to take responsibility for themselves, but I believe you are placing all the blame on a child for stepping outside the line. One of the presenting children stated that there will be consequences for going on a site that is blocked on the policy they made. If a site is truly blocked, why or how would a child be able to go on a blocked site? It appears that the consequences of improper safeguards and negligence should go back to those that are assigned with the task of ensuring our children's safety at school. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen Harris. I actually came to speak about the board policy and changes that were being discussed, and I would ditto everything that Ron said. I'd just like to have a Jane Austen quote from Pride and Prejudice that sometimes I think applies to the politics that we see on our board. Follies and nonsense, whims and inconsistencies do divert me. In regards to the technology issue, I agree with what everyone has said, and I hope that technology initiative committee, something to resolve this problem.
Thank you.
Angel Oakley. So I too had an idea of what I was going to say, and based on all the comments and utilities from all of her, so bear with me here. As far as the tech day, you know, I just recently learned about Grand Theft Auto. I'm not sure any of you know what that is, but I'm a parent who doesn't have too many games at home. We don't allow our kids to do first-person shooters. We don't allow graphic violence or, you know, R-rated movies or any of those types of things yet. Through this process, I have three children and four sons. Through this process, I have learned so much about all these things in the world I really don't want to know about. But Grand Theft Auto is a game that a lot of kids play, and you can go into strip clubs, and you can get prostitutes, and afterwards, if you want your money back, you can kill the prostitute and get your money back. And I have learned that my son has played this on friends' phones in the district that have it. So the idea of a tech day where these kids are bringing their phones to school and parents have supplied these apps on their phone and that can happen at school is so frustrating to me when I'm trying to do everything that I can to provide a safe environment, a tech environment for our kids. You know, the administration has repeatedly stressed to the press and to parents that this is an isolated incident, marginalizing the problem. The IT director did not do a district-wide audit of internet history to determine the scope of the problem. So while I keep hearing that we're taking this very seriously, it's the actions that I have a problem with. At the last board meeting, board members were told that there have only been three incidences, yet I've talked to parents who have sent emails regarding this topic and have never received a response. And I'll tell you, the parents I've talked to are mostly not the ones in this room. I FOIA'd emails this year containing words, or I FOIA'd emails for this year that contained words like sex, pornography, inappropriate searching, inappropriate images, internet filter, firewall, and I received a response declining my request because it's unduly burdensome for the district under Section 3G. The Illinois Attorney General's Office has informed me that I should submit a review because, as per the law, I was supposed to receive a phone call asking if I wanted to narrow my search. Clearly, if the district is in possession of enough emails using these types of words in an elementary environment that it's unduly burdensome to give me that material, we have a much larger problem. After asking to obtain internet history for one of my children, I'm told that the internet history for the district has been deleted. Gone. Okay, well, there's a Records Act that's supposed to be followed, so there is a backup, but I've been told that this is unduly burdensome to supply me the backup. I've done a great deal of research and provided the administration with a comprehensive approach to tackling the problem. Yet, based on my conversations with the IT director, internet access and IT oversight to date have not changed, and a plan has not been presented from the administration. This is already 8 weeks ago. This is a serious safety concern. I have a problem with the fact that this is not being expedited.
I'm sorry to say that's 3 minutes, and okay. we had a lot of people here tonight that okay. want to speak, so I'm sure that you will continue to address your concerns to the administration, because I feel as though you have a lot more to say, so I encourage you to follow through with the administration on that.
Nita?
I think I'll start the clock, so I just want to give you a handout real quick before I start talking. All right, my name is Nita Yalnowska. Happy Mom, Glenn Allen, D41 taxpayer. Thanks for letting me talk today. I'm grateful and feel spirit that my children have not yet been adversely affected by computers at school or at home. Unfortunately, there are plenty around here who have been, and that is why I'm standing here before you and their support. I live a proactive life as best as I can, locking my doors, being aware of my surroundings, all to keep myself and my family safe and far. I expect similar precautions at my children's schools. Recent news of internet breaches at school, places where kids should be learning, reading, and writing, has piqued my uneasiness and distrust in the policies in place. I understand that we want our schools to keep up with the technological advances, but this vision comes with a very large price for children. There are no excuses that can justify ability to breach a system for non-academic use.
Clearly, new safety measures have been put into place thus far. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this discussion. We need to be proactive, not reactive. Have foresight, not hindsight. What we're getting from this administration regarding those recent incidences is a reactive response. This is unacceptable because it involves our young children whose exposure to inappropriate content cannot be erased or reversed and will remain with them for the rest of their lives. Damage has been done already, and I feel for the parents whose children endure such effects well before the acceptable, if there is such a thing, time in their lives. This cannot be a mere discussion, brush under the rug, or silly-dallying, put off to another time. It must be addressed now. Trust in our school and administration is diminishing, but you can fix that. Do the right thing. Listen to the parents, teachers, and children who have to serve. Next year, Hadley's expected to acquire Chromebooks for their students. This concerns me to no end. If you don't have safety measures in place for our elementary schools, what makes you think they'll be in place for savvy middle schoolers? How will you prove to us that these systems are foolproof? Saying that nothing is foolproof is not an acceptable answer. We cannot afford, nor shall we allow, such laxity and disregard toward our children. There are schools near us with simple yet strict policies regarding cell phones and personal electronic devices, and the handout I gave you is a sample of the Bennett Academy in Lyle, their 2013-14 student handbook. On page 28, bullet points 42 and 44, I quote, cell phones and electronic devices such as TV and MP3 players, iPods, cameras, camera phones are to be turned off, stored in the lockers at all times during school hours and may not be used during that time. Violators who have devices confiscated, sent to the dean's office to be picked up by the student's parent, guardian, followed by appropriate disciplinary consequences. Calculators are allowed, but not if they are built in applications of the mentioned devices. Violators face the same disciplinary action. E-readers are allowed only for textbooks and notes. Use of the internet and non-educational applications on such devices is strictly prohibited. This is in bold print, emphasizing the fact that they will not take violation of this policy lightly. The point is, they have a policy, they adhere to it. Very simple. They take full responsibility for the academics of the children enrolled. The key is simply to prohibit the easy, The key is simply to prohibit personal electronic devices and to have specific academically aligned and approved sites, a whitelist. There's no reason whatsoever to have more than a quarter of a million websites at our children's fingertips for academic use. Thanks.
Thanks, Sue.
Thank you.
That's it? Okay. All right.
Wait,
you can't speak without filling out a sheet, sir. You should know better. Go ahead, Dan.
As this is Sam's last meeting, I just wanted to publicly thank him for his board service. I had the pleasure of serving with him for half my tenure, 2 to 4 years. Also served with him on negotiating team and some other things. A lot of busyness in the past 3 years. I want to wish him and his family best of luck on their next adventure.
Thanks, Dan. You've succeeded in embarrassing me. Dan must have had some foresight because the next item on the agenda is recognition of a retiring board member.
So we would just, the board, myself, staff, want to thank you from the bottom of our heart for all that you've done for our district, the guidance that you've given me this past 11 months has been immeasurable. You've just been a great leader for our district, and I appreciate all the time, the effort you've given to me, a new superintendent trying to figure his way out. So I absolutely appreciate all you've done. We have a proclamation in recognition of school board member Sam Black. Whereas Sam Black has served District 41 faithfully in his role as board president and member of the Board of Education Policy Committee, and whereas Sam Black's 3+ years of board service have been distinguished by his sincere concern for District 41 now and in the future, and whereas Sam Black has always managed the competing demands of family and school board responsibilities with grace and good cheer, and whereas Sam Black has led by courtesy, civility, integrity, and whereas because the Black family is moving to Florida, the Board of Education has had to regretfully accept Sam's resignation. Therefore, be it proclaimed that in recognition of Sam's service as a board member from May 2, 2011 through June 10, 2014, the board recognizes, honors, and thank Sam for his dedication to the District 41 community and especially to the education of its children. Thank you. Just what you wanted. Sam loves the attention.
Since you're moving to Florida, we thought we would give you a few things because we're sure you're just going to be sitting on the beach doing nothing. So here you go, a little reading material, the National Enquirer, you know, flip-flops.
Some beach sandwear. Very nice. Thank
Very
you.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you, Sam, for your willingness to run for this important role. We sat on the same dais when we were running together, and it's been a true pleasure to serve with you. About, about 5 months ago, we were both at an IASB dinner, and listening to what some other districts were doing in terms of their educational programs, and looked at each other and said, you know, we have a lot to be proud of in this district. And I'm incredibly proud to have served with you, so thank you. And also thank your wife, Beth, and your daughters, because I think as anybody in this room who's ever served on a committee or a board, you know that you can't do it without the support of your family, and they have been true sponsors of your work, so please thank them for us.
I will. Thank you.
So, in interest of the parents, I'd like to have Mike address an update from where we're at with the internet, with our ongoing problem solving of that. I'll also start by saying I met with principals last week regarding the policy, the internet policy, and I do recognize there is an inconsistency application of that policy from classroom to classroom. From school to school. That is something that we're going to wrap our arms around early this summer in June and find that consistency in whatever the policy is and whatever the procedures are, that's what needs to be followed. As I said at the previous board meeting, I will also be reaching out to parent group in late summer to talk about it because it not every parent agrees that their kids shouldn't have a cell phone on them. So, but I think we have consistency around what occurs with that cell phone during the day because I heard one policy, it has to be in the locker. But I don't believe every parent in this community believes that. I think many parents believe that their kids should have their cell phone on them. So we have to have that open, hard conversation. Oftentimes we think these things are just black and white. And there's no in-between here. And I think we've got to find that in-between, but engage parents in that conversation. Where are we at with it? Where are we at with the cell phones? Is it in their backpack? Is it in their pocket? Or is it in their locker? Or is it at home? But the consistency is we have to talk about is if that phone is out or that device, what is that? What's going to occur there? What occurs within that situation. So I'm going to be reaching out to parents to have that conversation because I know some people were shaking their head at me and others were shaking their head affirming. So right here in this group, we have people who want their kids to have a cell phone on them and others who absolutely don't. These are hard conversations. Easy to get up and stand and tell us what to do. But I am going to engage, like we did with the community listening sessions, where we're sitting and we're talking and we're having conversations about this, but that we come out with actionable items to move forward on what does our community want for our kids, your kids, as they walk with technology. As I forgot the individual's name in the back. I believe it was
this.
Pam
Keller.
I could be grabbing the wrong name right here.
Liz Rutkin.
Yeah. Around ensuring that we have all stakeholders' input in this. That it's not one. Do we have a lot to do? I've never gone away from our responsibility on this. We have work to do, and Mike's going to talk about that. But I think we all have to engage around how are we going to deal with the cell phone thing? That is not just a school issue. That is a parent, that's a district conversation we have to have. And I'm open for that conversation. I want that conversation. So those are the steps we're going to have. But early June, my administrative team will be coming together to say, okay, what occurs when a kid brings out technology? Because quite honestly, we have a lot of technology in our district. I would want to know the educational value of bringing out a phone. Because of the board's decision and support of implementing further technology in our district, why would we need a home device in the classroom setting? So those are hard conversations that we need to have. But August, I'll be engaging parents to come to the table to talk with us. But I do not believe it is as cut and dry as some want to make it sound. I think we're going to have a really hard conversation again. But with that, I'm going to hand it over to Mike to talk about what are we looking at within our firewall and other devices.
Well, from a technology standpoint, first thing I did is I contacted an outside vendor, an outside consultant, to look into a security audit of our networks. So that goes beyond just the internet content filters. A lot of the websites that we also host here, and to make sure that those are secure and protected against intrusion, any kind of outside attacks. So make sure we're up to date on that. Our security certificates are all up to date, as well as our firewall is up to date. We're also looking at other content filters. We've got about five that we're looking at right now, and as I promised the board, I plan to bring a recommendation to them before fall and have it implemented before fall. And so we're looking at a little bit different content filter as well, something that works a little smarter than the one that we currently have in place. What we have in place is mainly a database type of a content filter. As I explained before, it receives updates on an hourly basis for new sites as they come up, and they're categorized, and then they're either allowed or blocked based on those categories. So the content filters that we're looking at now are a little smarter in that they will run an algorithm against the page. So rather than relying on categorization and these updates to come in, these content filters will look for certain keywords, certain and the context in which those words are used. So whether or not they would be considered sexually explicit should be parsed out. So we wouldn't have to block the site entirely. And it could even be an innocuous site, even a blog or something like that. That maybe that site is available, but as soon as it hits a page that has those kind of offensive, that kind of offensive language, then that page would be blocked. So it still works on, it still blocks all the other categories that we also block currently, whether it's profanity or hate speech or smoking or alcohol, those sorts of things. But it also works a little smarter when it comes to dealing with sexually explicit content as well. So hope to bring a recommendation to the board, and maybe even possibly at the next board meeting, if not definitely by July, and we plan to have that implemented. Now for the Chromebooks at Hadley next year, we also are going to implement something called Teacher Dashboard. One of the parents had mentioned at one of the schools that they have the ability to be able to see what's going on the student's screen, and that's what this product will provide teachers, is the ability to be able to see, even from their desk, what all their students are looking at. When they're on the web, so they can better monitor that. And the firewall that we're looking at, or the content filter, I should say, that we're looking at, will also provide better reporting, more in-the-moment reporting, alerts, things that will alert the IT staff if something is going on that we should be aware of, as well as their Gmail accounts are heavily monitored, as well as their Google accounts, which is what they'll be working with, would be heavily monitored. So all of those tools give us a lot more control from an IT standpoint. So not only will we have better monitoring, but we'll also be able to react quicker to these things as they come up.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
Can I ask?
Please.
Sorry.
Yes. No, please.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, just a couple things. This whole discussion, I think one of the comments about being multidimensional is important, you know, beyond the technology and, you know, while that might mean, you know, I don't know, kicking off the school year with a joint parent,
mm-hmm.
you know, specialist people coming in and talking about it, and making sure that we're all in this together. You know, it's just an idea to throw out there. But I also don't know if it's possible, but the idea, I know you talk about a teacher dashboard, and the way I kind of see it is a couple problems. There's the, you know, district device, district network, and then what happens on that device. Sounds like the dashboard could be a good thing, but it also means, you know, teachers have to be, you know, watching and being cognizant of everything that's going on, which they can't always do because sometimes they're in different groups. And then there's the, I bring my own device in and I'm on the district network and I'm doing things. I don't know if there's a way to get a, you know, the teacher dashboard is a good thing, but is there a way to get a dashboard on the kids to say, you know, to be able to have a parent be able to go to a site and say, here's what your kid did on the internet today on our network. I don't know if that's possible, but that could be something that gets the parents engaged too, to say, you know, to Paul's point, some parents may not care and just say, we don't care, they do that. And other parents might watch it and, you know, access it and say, oh, wait a minute. And that would help us know, you know, we got another pair of eyes looking on it. So it's just an idea to throw out there.
Yeah, I mean, it is possible. It is possible to force those devices to enroll with the service. So we can also be able to see what they monitor, what they're surfing over. That's never really done within the scope.
Right.
The IT department does here. We also manage about 5,000 devices here. So if we had to manage all of those personal devices as well, that's a great deal of overhead for us to have to take on. And Paul and the principals and I have had this discussion as to whether or not that's really necessary for instructional use when we're in such a technology that we're just going to follow.
I would think that doing it for our own devices, to be able to say, here's on our device, here's our network, we should make that available to our teachers. That was brought up, I think, in another meeting, too, and I think it's a really good idea, because if you go back and tie that into what John just suggested at the beginning of the year, you could show everybody, by the way, here you go to these sites, and your parents at home can see the sites. So there's a deterrent there. As far as trying to do that with the other devices, keep in mind that a lot of these kids have cellular plans, too, and you're not going to have any access to what they do there. So I think we have to have some sort of a policy that is very strict about what kids do with their own phones on site. Now, the problem that we get to, that I think you alluded to earlier, is as soon as they step off our site, and as soon as they're on their way home, then it's in your hands. Because we can't do anything about them. But we can really tighten it up here at school. And we'll have to figure out a way, I think, to do that in such a way that we don't have a lot of other people being upset that they can't get hold of their child all day long. You know, because if you put in a locker and I want to call my child or text my child halfway through the day, they're not going to get that text anymore. And you know what? A few years ago, there was no such thing as a text.
I caution us to try to solution this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's
so
what we're not going
to
do.
Let's take Paul's recommendation to engage the community through listening tours and quizzes to come up with tactical and strategic definitions and milestones going forward before the school year starts. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
I'm not sure where we're at.
Moving on to presentations, reports, and initiatives. The parent teacher advisory presentation and recommended, Jill and Gina are here. Whenever you're ready.
Just to introduce everybody, I am Julia Ryan. I'm one of the principals at Hadley. It's my work wife. We're together all the time. Mrs. Crisman, she's the other AP. We do have some representatives from PTAC here. If you guys wouldn't mind just giving a wish, we have Lori Taylor representing one of our parent committee members. We have Jen Frazier as one of our parent committee members. We have Mr. Dave Scarbardo, director of Buildings and Grounds. And then Mr. Chris Abbott, our LMC specialist. We got everybody. So the purpose of the parent-teacher, you can go to the next slide. The purpose of this committee is we actually meet yearly to kind of review policies, safety procedures, student behavior, discipline data, and then we make recommendations to the board. So based on the work that the committee did this year, we had representatives parent-wise and teacher-wise from the elementaries and Hadley. So we tried to make sure we had everybody across the district representing the group, and then we kind of reviewed the recommendations from last year. And then what we thought the work of our group would be was where we are with those implementations and then what our next steps would be with those. And we kind kind of felt like the kind of maintaining that fidelity and consistency was important.
The committee was presented with 10 different recommendations, so we are going to highlight evidence and work that the schools have done towards those initiatives, and then also what the recommended next steps were by the committee. The first one, the key terminology in there is education of our safety procedures. A couple of things to highlight for evidence is that across the district, an implementation of a district-wide standard response protocol was put into place. What this does is it centralizes common language related to safety procedures, as well as allows for a common response. So that's universal. Kids progress through the district up pre-K through eighth grade. They'll have common terminology as well as common procedures. The second big initiative from this category was the district identified a safety coordinator. That's Mr. David Carmato. As well as at Hadley Junior High, we implemented a sweep team, as well as an area of rescue assistance. This is working with a fire department for students who need mobility assistance. They centralize themselves if they need to be evacuated, and the fire department responds to that specific location rather than having students throughout the entire building. Recommended next steps specific to the, I'm sorry, also in this category in the education piece, throughout the school year, back in October, all building administrators, all teachers, all related service providers, as well as support staff were trained in the standard response protocol. Upcoming this summer at the next step, our custodial staff across the district will be trained, as well as our substitute teachers, so that all personnel that work and interact with our students on a daily basis will have knowledge in that area of safety procedures across the building. Looking at the second recommendation, key terminology here is our safety drills. Per ISBE laws, all safety drills relating to a lockdown, an evacuation, a shelter, as well as an active shooter drill are required to be practiced every single year. All the schools did fulfill that requirement. At Hadley specifically, we did do evacuations during lunch and PE classes, and the district safety chair does random safety checks throughout the building, and then follows up with building administration on areas that he recognized as vulnerable areas. Looking ahead to next steps, the committee recommended that all of our, to align with ISBE regulation, all of the safety drills will be conducted, round one of the safety drills will be conducted by October 1st to ensure that all students are aware of the different safety protocols. And then the implementation to review procedures during lunch, PE, and acting periods across the entire district were recommended as next step. Looking at recommendation number three, key terminology is police.
So I think this was one of our first presentations when we came on the board. And I'm going to ask the same question that we did. Did we conduct a drill? I think there was concern about after school activities and people in the school after school.
That'll come across later.
It's going to be on the next slide.
Number seven, I think.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you.
When you asked that question last year. Institutional memory.
Recommendation number three talks about a police partnership across the district. Highlights from this recommendation include police visits to all the schools on a more consistent basis, and specifically they have, we see them at least once a week within the school building. Recommendation of next steps specific to this, Mr. Charbonneau is working with the Glen Ellyn Police Department to have Hadley be a pilot for a system called the Federal Signal Smart MFG system. It's a mouthful. What this involves, the technology piece of it is buttons are installed throughout the school, and that activates a lockdown. So if we find a need for a lockdown, the button is pushed, and what it does is it sends out an automated message over the intercom system that the school is in a lockdown, which it alerts the students and the staff to proceed into lockdown procedures. The second piece of that, which is actually the critical piece, is that it automatically alerts all police municipalities in the area. It goes to their patrol cars that Hadley is in a lockdown, so they have immediate response. It takes out the middleman, which currently is in place. So we are hoping to get to be the test site for that.
looking at recommendation number 4, this involves safety practices. All schools had additional cameras installed into their buildings this year, as well as that video and audio buzzing system, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with at all the schools. Recommendations for next steps. For those of you who have students at Glenmore West, one example is a Raptor system. We are looking to implement. What this does is scans all IDs of visitors and checks the IDs across the sex offender list. It also provides an electronic sign-in, so we know everyone who is in the building. So in the event of emergency procedures, we can print out that list, and then we have that on site for police and fire. Also in this category, in response to the conceal and carry laws, the no gun signs are posted at the primary entrance door, main entrance doors at all the buildings. Also across the district, a keyless system was put into place to secure all of the classroom doors. In a lockdown, it's a latch that's on the top of the doors. What it does, it allows the teacher to flip the latch and it automatically closes the door and locks it, so they don't no longer have to go out into the hall to lock the door in the event of a lockdown. And then finally in this area, window shades. For those of you who didn't realize, our doors have windows in them. So shades were put in to pull down, again, in a lockdown situation.
Mike, do you want to go on the next one? Review safety procedures. There are crisis management guidelines for CSO and all the D41 schools. This year, they revised the CSO guidelines, and they're going to be doing the school ones next year. So that's kind of just a short review of that recommendation. Working with the new appointed PTA safety chair, that position was reinstated this year, and each school established a safety team. Next year, they're rolling out a district-wide safety fair for parents, and they're also we're also recommending that there's kind of a building roundtable discussion with administration and the PTA safety teams in order to make sure that we're still consistently hearing that parent perspective. The number 7 that we're going to talk about is that after-hours entry protocol for each building. There is a buzz-in system at the elementaries that people were trained on over the course of this school year. What we are recommending is that we formalize and develop a plan with the Park District, and then also for D41 events that we host at night. We kind of feel like the buildings kind of maybe open a little bit more than we would like at night. So we were really looking at what kind of safety procedures are we specifically looking for with the Park District and then with our D41 events and even with our after-school activities, particularly at Hadley. Some of the concerns the parent committee members had said is that, you know, our office closes at 4, and many times the children are in the building till at least 4:45 or 5. So kind of each group that's working, the supervisor kind of communicating with parents what those procedures are and kind of being consistent building-wide in terms of how, you know, we have access of our students in the building. Number 8 is the Internet Safety one. The committee really didn't want to overlap with a lot of the work that the IT department and what Paul was talking about that's going to occur over the course of the school of the summer. So just some things that we've done in the past. We've done some internet and cyberbullying presentations at the 6th grade, especially kids coming into Hadley because we do have a lot of technology there. The Hadley FNC specialist works a lot with our literacy and social studies teachers to kind of embed internet safety through their research. Something that's new this year with the implementation of school email through students is there's an objectionable content filter. So anytime anything might be somewhat inappropriate and a student is trying to email another student at school, it's actually intercepted and received by us. And then we follow up on our end. So the students actually don't receive it. That's kind of just been a nice filter that's been in place this year that's helped. And we've kind of communicated that information to our students. Some were a bit surprised. The LMC specialists at the elementary do their training with students, but the group was kind of feeling that this curriculum should be a little bit more embedded throughout the content classes throughout the year. I mean, it really needs to be a big push, especially with our one-to-one rollout of technology at Hadley. We had talked about really embedding a lot of tech trainings at the beginning of the school year. I think right now it's called Hours of Tech that we're kind of working with. I know that the instructional technology specialist is working on that with Chris Abbott, our LMC specialist. Chris was representing the LMC specialist and feeling like he wanted to work towards kind of developing a district-wide plan for internet safety. Again, we've seen a lot of success with just our building safety, kind of getting that common language across the district. So really felt like that would be some nice work with all of the specialists in conjunction with working with the technology department and really making kind of that a district-wide initiative. parent perspective from it was they wanted information also sent to them. So they were kind of feeling like there's sometimes that we're doing stuff at school, and they kind of wanted a follow-up shortly after that to let parents know, here's what kind of happened at school in terms of our training, and then here's kind of a parent tip that you can kind of do. Because they were saying they themselves felt a little bit behind in the education piece and was feeling like that might be a nice component, and Chris was kind of feeling like that would definitely be something that we were looking for. If you look at the next recommendation after that.
The final two recommendations that the committee looked at are related to the culture of care. The first one, number 10, is related to the protocol of bullying. All five of our schools use the District 41 Bullying Prevention Protocol. As part of this protocol, we do use the acronym SWOT, which stands for Stop, Walk Away, and Talk. It's a method to have students cope as well as report with bullying behavior. Also, obviously, at Hadley Junior High, we do have a social worker, psychologist, and counselors who are available to our students. Recommended next steps moving forward is that the committee asks for the protocol to be reviewed periodically throughout the year on an ongoing basis to remind students about what those procedures are and the events they need to report any acts of bullying. And then also at the sixth grade level, our students did a PBL related to the bullying, and it was recommended that that be reviewed with our students moving forward. The last recommendation the committee reviewed, number 11, deals with the education of bullying and cyberbullying. Currently, this past school year, presentations by the guidance counselors at Hadley covered this topic at a PTA meeting. A big focus was on cyber safety and drew awareness to different websites that our kids are currently using for social media. The YWCA presents to our sixth graders as part of the health curriculum. And then we also do a parent night through the YWCA. Moving forward, the next step in this recommendation, specific to this recommendation, would be to add and embed into the health curriculum education related to cyberbullying and bullying, which, as you know, next year all of our students, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, will have 9 weeks of health. So that would be embedded into the curriculum. So to just conclude, the recommendations that the committee did review, we do want to thank their membership again for their work this spring that we met. If there's any questions, we can entertain those at this time.
Any questions or comments?
So just a quick one, and it just ties into the commentary of earlier. And that is that the PTAC, and you're right, every year we have a review of, you know, what they've been doing, would be a natural connection for Paul's comment about, you know, building the parent piece into conversation. So without reinventing some of the wheel, but then engage more of the voices in it as well. So we already have a foundation for this. You guys do this on an ongoing basis. So, you know, you're more versed in some of what you're looking at, why you're looking at it, how it aligns within this, you know, school code as well. And so it's a natural connection. So I'd like to see that. You guys connect and do it, you know, get to that more quickly.
I got a quick question. Can you quickly walk through the unfortunate event when we have a lockdown? What happens?
Sure. It depends on where the students are at in the building.
Okay, happy. You did that ahead.
Yep. So specific, the first most important is to move to a safe spot. So when you are in a lockdown, you want to be out of sight.
It happens. Boom. How did it communicate to the school today without the push button?
Currently, it is over the intercom, which is only available in the main office.
So somebody has to go to the main office to say that we're in a lockdown.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Then,
so if something were happening in the classroom, a teacher would.
They would have to call use their phone, call the main office, and the main office has to call out the all calls that we are in a lockdown.
Then all classrooms.
And then all persons in the building proceed into lockdown procedures, which is out of sight, and preferably move into a locked location. Students who are in the hallways move to the closest door or the closest classroom, whether it's locked or not. As long as they can get in, and they can shut the door with that latching system. If they're in the bathroom, it's recommended they stay in the bathroom and stand on top of the toilet seat and shut the door so that they're not visible. Research shows that most active shooters have their target in mind, and bathrooms are not the target. So we do recommend students stay in the bathrooms. If they're outside, they do not re-enter the building. They do stay outside, and they report to our off-site safe location, which is Dunbar West High School. If they're in the gym,
They report to the locker rooms. If they're in the cafeteria, they report to the kitchen or else the teacher's lunch. And then they wait until, if it's a real lockdown, Glenbard West then takes over all procedures once they are on site. We are in our command center, and they come to our command center, and then they facilitate the diamond approach to sweep the building, and then they evacuate every room by room.
And then how is the communication out to the administration and crystal clear message out to the parents and then the other schools?
So first, we all carry radios with us. Our radios do link to CSO's handheld radios. So we would radio them that we're in a lockdown, as well as use our cell phones, which we all carry, to text Mr. Scarvato as well as Dr. Gordon. And then the follow-up of parent communication is usually facilitated through Julie Worthen. She provides, we provide her the updates on kind of what happened and the timeline, and then she facilitates that through the school messenger system.
And then all that's happening at Hadley, what's happening at Ben Franklin, Churchill?
So traditionally, there's a radius. So if one school's in the lockdown, because we're a tight little community here, logistically, most of those schools traditionally go into lockdown at the request of the police department. It is important to note, though, that a lockdown could be held if there's an emergency situation in the vicinity of the school, such as a domestic dispute. So we are called sometimes to be put into a lockdown, not because of the school being in danger, in immediate danger, it's the school community in the area.
And then how do you get the all clear?
So the all clear, if it's a real threat to the school's safety, the police, once they evacuate all persons in the school, then they provide the all clear. So we actually cannot unlock any doors as building administrators. The police have to evacuate all persons.
So Patrick, the police will go door to door, do. This is the Glen Ellyn police or whomever is taking control of it. They'll come in, show their badge, because you cannot get on the all-call system and say, it's all clear. It is literally door-to-door, releasing everybody. They're to walk out hand-in-hand and single file, and the police will escort them out, each group out.
Where do they escort them out to?
That'll be the police. That'll be Glen Ellyn's decision determining where the safety is. If it's a true lockdown, they will take full command and determine where they're going to bring kids to, depending on where, if it's an active shooter. But if it, go for it. No, please.
Currently, at Hadley, our reunification site is what it's called, is at Glenbard West High School. It is quite a distance, but we have to have a location that is large enough to accommodate our 1,200 students as well as all the families who are responding. So what we recommend is, if we are in a lockdown, what we do not want is parents to come to the school, because then that provides more barriers for the police to work through, and then they have to assess if every person that comes to school is part of the active shooter.
So where
so we
are
want the families to stay.
Then where are the elementaries?
I'm not sure specifically on where their reunification sites are. I'd have to follow up with the different schools. But part of our training to the staff and students is never open a door, so the police have keys to the building.
Yep.
And my final question is always during emergency and chaos, everybody wants to be a leader, right?
Yes.
So who is the decision maker during those initial times when people start saying, well, why don't we do this and why are we going there? Like, who is that leader until it gets handed off to the authorities?
So and prior to authorities, it is traditionally building administration. We do have a point person at Hadley, that's me.
Okay.
And then if I'm not here, we have the chain of command.
Okay. So you're the, if people start asking, let's go to the left side of the building or the right side of the building, and this isn't the plan, you're the, you're the person in charge.
I am. Don't put that in the notes.
Well, it's really why we follow the, those are the why we follow the policy. It's why we practice. It's why we do the safety protocol to ensure that kids know exactly where they're going. Because when it's happening, you're not making, okay, let's move over to the west side of the building. Let's move over to the east side of the building. When it's a lockdown and things are happening, you are following the procedures. You're going to into a lockdown area. You're turning off the lights. You're locking the door. And you're getting away. You are following those procedures all the time. And you're silent. That's what we have to fall back on. And these pieces have been vetted by national, state-level authorities to say this is a proven protocol that we follow, because you can't be making those types of decisions when a shooter or anybody else is there. You've got to fall back on the things that you've practiced all the time.
What's the possibility that that we'll get the grant for that?
I would have to turn that over to you. Possibility of our grant to the Raptor?
Possibly,
yeah. The Raptor or the
The bus.
Yeah, I mean, this year we applied for additional security cameras, and we go to digital ones. So that pretty much filled up the earmarked dollars for that grant, but in the future we could probably apply for that too.
Yeah, part of the training team, Mr. Scarbotta, we went to the DuPage County School Safety Symposium this past fall, and then also I know yearly between this position and my previous role in my previous district, the school, Illinois School Safety Conference, we've been in attendance to, and then so it's ongoing education each year as protocol changes. So we do stay up to date and current on procedures. And then part of our training, or part of our yearly, we do meet with police in the fall each year and fire to review procedures such as our area of rescue assistance and identify where it is in the building.
I can answer real quick about the elementary schools, because when Deputy Chief Palmer presented to the PTA conference, he did say that they're not going to publish and they can't determine for each elementary school where that drop-off place would be, because depending on the situation, tornado, active shooter, it's at multiple buildings. And they also don't want to tip off somebody that pre-plans this kind of stuff. So for each of those schools, they go on a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. The other thing I was thinking for our safety here, we thought as PTA council that video of the lockout procedure, but maybe that could be like one of the rooms that we just present that video for parents that haven't seen it. That
because it's pretty intense. I mean, yeah, when they're coming in and it's a real situation, they're in SWAT gears, guns are pulled, and they're taking the situation seriously. As Gina or Jill said, they're coming in, they're diamond formation, they are working the scene. And the hard reality is, and it's other schools that have talked about it, if it's a true situation, they're walking over people. They continue to move down. They radio back to others to let them know what they're seeing, but they're in the process of finding the shooter. That is their role. It's very intense. It's very different than what we would actually see. And you're right. I appreciate when you see them in their masks and their full SWAT gear, it's a different look than what you're used to seeing on the street corner with the Glen Allen police.
Is that the video they showed to the kids
this year? I think it's a great idea. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I have a question. This stuff is kind of scary, right? And it's unfortunately the times we're in, but is there a social, emotional aspect to this where, you know, you don't want your kids going to school every day worried this is the lockdown day or this could happen. And, you know, they need to be aware, they need to be trained. But is a part of this social, emotionally making them feel that...
Yeah, well, what we do is our first drill for each type, the four main types. We do walk the kids through over the intercom, actually facilitate that. We explain the purpose of the drill and why we do it, and then we walk them through the procedure. So the first one is all facilitated in a very orderly, structured fashion, because we want them to start to get into the mindset of easing that anxiety. The state does require us to do one unannounced lockdown. They just show up, the police, and call the lockdown. So our teachers, I mean, no one knows when that occurs. So that is where we get in the heightened alarm from our students, because they don't know whether to, as well as our teachers. So in order to kind of combat that, we do want to practice throughout the year, because the immediate need is same consistent response by all the kids, and they need to know what to do, as well as our staff, because we recognize as a teacher, we all respond to stress differently. And we want to make sure that they are able to maintain order over their class as well as calming their own nerves. We do have our social workers, our counselors, our psychologists available. So I know after our unannounced drill, a lot of the classroom teachers also just kind of facilitated a little conversation, making sure the kids were comforted. But you're right, it is an area that is, can be high stress, lots of anxiety provoking situations. I can speak to, I was in an active shooter drill at my previous district, and you're seeing him coming, and I was identified as someone who got killed. So, like, I got shot, and I was laying on the ground, and they walked over me, and it took 3 hours for them to evacuate the building that we were in. So those types of drills definitely draw awareness of vulnerabilities, and but it allows, I think there's knowledge in knowing. The more you know, the calmer you are in a situation, because it's the fear of the unknown that heightens anxiety. So our students, we would direct them to counselors, social workers, psychologists, and teachers.
And my other question is, you know, on the weekends, I know especially at Hadley, you know, there are coaches come in and parents and all that. So are they subject to the potential future scanning of IDs and background checks and all that? Is that part of it?
We haven't talked about after-hour procedures specific to the scanning, because that would involve, obviously, first personnel, someone to man the system. So that's something we'd have to work that out.
Because there are, you know, quite a few unknowns in the building on the weekends.
There are, yes. Obviously, there would have to be a partnership with the park district. They are the number one user of our facilities. So training their coaching staff and different activities on how to use. I don't know if we would have them use the system, but we want to make sure they know the safety procedures. In all the classrooms throughout the district, there's uniform posters that were put in place over winter break. It kind of breaks down the different safety procedures, so it's universal. Again, that common language, common response.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? All right, thanks to Jill, Gina, and all the members of the committee for their work on this. Thank you.
Good job. I'd also like to recognize, and I know he's going to hate this, Dave Scarmato, who has led this effort from day one. Just really appreciate all his work, all the time he's put into it. When I asked him to lead it, he just took it on, championed the work from day one, and has continued to push it forward. So I really appreciate Dave and all of his work. Huge kudos to Jill and Gina for taking care of this and leading this initiative. So thanks to all of you. Great work. Great work.
Thank you. Okay, Teams for Excellence annual report.
All right. Get us stand up. Nice. So, we're gonna shorten this up a little bit.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody's gonna mind that too much. We're going to give the annual report for Teams for Excellence. Teams for Excellence has within it the building leadership teams, Team 21, CIT, and the professional development team. So that first one we have is the building leadership team.
Right, and you know, I'm Brian Bonkowski, a teacher at Hadley. I'm co-chair of CIT with Dr. Gordon,
also partner,
one of the co-presidents of the association, the teachers association. The BLTs, you know, there are five of them. They're at each building, so they've been involved over the course of the year in lots of different activities. Some specific to their individual building, others that are somewhat district. That are district wide, such as every building is involved in the Rising Star School Improvement Process. Four elementaries are all, of course, involved in the implementation of 21st century learning concepts, multi-age groupings, and specialization. As you can see, they've been involved with a lot of activities all year, and we'll continue on next year. And I think we can go to the next slide of the next steps, because it's probably. At this point of the year, what we're most interested in is sort of where the work this year has directed their attention for next year. And you can see some of the main emphases that will be addressed by the building leadership teams next year. Central to many of these, again, are the school improvement process, which is a key part of their work next year. The work, and you'll see this with other groups as well, as it's emerged this year, that desire to focus more effort on improving our professional learning communities and their efficiency and success, and also in differentiated instruction. Those are some of the key areas that you'll see common to all of the team strike slots and their work next year.
The next slide will be for that Team 21 accomplishments. Really grew in their understanding of their charge, really refocusing what is it we're doing, because we're a team of innovation and continuing that charge. They created the evaluation framework for the 21st century, researched and studied, spent an enormous amount of time studying the time and day recommendation that they brought to CIT, reviewed the student, staff, parent feedback, addressed social-emotional aspects for our students. So they've been incredibly busy, like all the other teams. We will move to the next steps, or the work plan. Again, you'll see a theme in which Brian was talking about, where they're really going to be focusing on that instruction and making sure that that's their primary focus. They're going to focus on the D41 learning characteristics, continuing to bring those forward. Those are an important part of our district, and making sure that is central to our work. Focus on our PLCs. This is core work, that our teachers have these opportunities in professional learning communities to work together, to think together, to plan together, and continue to ensure that those are a strong feature of our district. With professional development.
All right. Again, they have had a very productive and busy year. PDT has, they have quite a few institute and other professional development days to plan and make meaningful for all of our constituent groups. And they've worked hard to refine their plans to differentiate professional development opportunities based on need and based on what your role is in D41. And then, of course, with so many of the new initiatives, that's the word, thank you, that are happening in the elementary, and then, of course, the rollout of new technology and problem-based learning, their work is never something that they're trying to figure out what to do next. Always something new for them to help us learn more about. So if we go to the next steps, again, they're going to be emphasizing unit planning that you know, directly affects instructional techniques and processes. The implementation, as I mentioned before, problem-based learning, which is going to be a big part of what we do next year. And again, to continue their focus on differentiated professional development, so that each member of staff, whether they are a licensed educator or part of our educational support professionals, they get the development that they need to do the best for the kids here.
CIT, the team that Brian and I co-chair together, made a recommendation for further exploration of full-day kindergarten to the board, studied student achievement. We really spent an enormous amount of time looking at student data across all buildings, district-wide. What does it look like? Looking from the ISAT, looking at the map, looking at the advanced analytics benchmarking. We're the group that said, we've got to focus in these three areas around instruction, PLCs, and the social-emotional aspect of our students' lives. Our next steps, as we met today, to continue to oversee, align, and facilitate the work of Team 21, PDT, and building leaderships. This is important. This engine really needs to keep everybody else moving. But we have to see direct alignment between PDT, the BLTs, and Team 21, that we're all working on this together. And today we were able to lay that out and see that coherentness, that very cohesive and coherent approach to what we're trying to do. Continue to monitor all the student achievement throughout the district. And then we were working on our summer send-off message, which is Wednesday morning, that we will be addressing all of our teachers. We're excited about bringing our teachers together. That's not a normal, that hasn't happened in the past, where we started the year together, we're going to finish the year together. And I think it's an important message that we send to our staff. So we're excited about that. With that, that's our report. That's the condensed version. That's the Brian and Paul. Condensed version.
Any questions for Brian and Paul?
Just one.
Yes, sir.
On the Team 21 accomplishments, creating an evaluation framework for valuing the 21st century, is that all the framework and data that we're going to collect between now and
next year? Correct. And PDT's, what a PDT charge is to be asking about that professional, and what do you need? Well, what are those pieces you need to continue moving that forward? So, yes, you'll be seeing that.
Okay. This is all right. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Paul. Okay. PTA Executive Council update. Kristen.
Wow. Change my notes a little bit since we brought up my safety care. First, before I get to that part, just wanted to bring some of the funding that we are closing out the year. Last week, the 8th graders over at Hadley went on their annual boat trip, which weather was fabulous, so it was a great day for all our 8th graders today. Our 6th and 7th graders went to Hollywood Boulevard Theater to see some movies. Usually they go bowling and to Enchanted Castle, but because of the changes in our schedule this year, just something a little different. So, hope that worked out really well for everyone. Other schools are completed their years today with their field days or Olympic Day, so that's always a wonderful closing part of the year as well. And again, the weather was wonderful for today as well. So, that's fabulous. So I'll bring up the safety fair. We actually just solidified our date for next year, so it will be March 7th of 2015 at Hadley. We are working right now with, we've already have commitments from the Glen Allen Park District, Police Department, as well as the Glen Allen Library Department for this event. And it will be multifaceted. It will have information groups for just general handouts, people to speak to. There will be hands-on activities like bike safety, CPR, and then we'll also have breakout sessions on multiple different topics. So, make sure you put that on the calendar, and we'll be obviously talking about it a lot next year. So, and for all of those that are here, I invite you to help with the organization of it. What's that?
All the districts.
Oh, this is the entire district. Yes, yeah, the district 41. So, it's for the entire district. It's not just Hadley, so it will be K-8. So that's why it's for everyone who doesn't know how the PTA procession goes. Council is is leadership above all of the five schools within Glen Allen. So when we put on events, we put it on for all of the schools. As opposed to like when Lincoln puts on an event, it's really for the Lincoln community. We put on events for the entire community. So I invite anyone in the room that's interested, please send me an email. I am coordinating this. Rita, who spoke a couple times tonight, she is our safety chair for council. And I last year made a commitment with council that we would take this on as an event. I can't remember the last time that council has actually run an event other than reflection. So this will be a big deal for us. And Lori Taylor is going to be taking over the helm at District 41 PTA Council. So I will be helping her with running this event next year. And lastly, I just wanted to thank the board, the administration, the parents, everyone in the community for the support of the PTA. Obviously, without your help, we wouldn't be as successful as we are. So, especially the board, you attend our meetings. You allow us now to participate and be here as well with you. And obviously, have a lot of our members here to exchange information. So, thank you very much.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks, Kristen.
Okay, action items. The consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Okay, hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes the Human Resources Personnel Report, Employment Recommendations, the Finance Facilities and Operations Report, including the Prevailing Wage Act, and other matters, including approval of board meeting minutes from the May 27, 2014 regular board meeting, the May 27, 2014 regular meeting closed session, the May 31st, 2014 special board meeting, the May 31st, 2014 special board meeting closed session minutes, and the June 4th, 2014 special meeting, and the June 4th, 2014 special meeting closed session minutes. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Elger. Second by Mr. Ellis. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Botensky?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Kenworth?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Glass?
I'm abstaining from this vote. Okay, the next item, appointment of board member to fill the vacancy created by Sam Black's resignation, my resignation. Before we get into this, I just want to make it clear that I participated in the interview process as the board president per board policy. I asked the questions in the interview process, but I did not participate in the discussion with other board members, nor will I participate in the vote this evening on the new board member. So, having said that, we had an extremely impressive group, 14 applicants. The board has read all the applications and interviewed all of the candidates. I want to thank those who put themselves forward because they want to serve our district, and I hope that they will all stay involved. I'm looking at one person in particular. It's a difficult decision. The board was unanimous in selecting Catherine Wilkinson. Is Catherine here tonight?
No, she isn't.
We didn't think she was, but to fill the vacancy created by my resignation. Ms. Wilkinson has lived in the district for 10 years. 14 years of experience in higher education, the last seven at the College of DuPage, where she's been a teacher and an associate dean. Ms. Wilkinson will become official tomorrow after signing a letter of commitment, including the oath of office, and will be welcomed to the board at the June 23rd, 2014 meeting. We have a motion to appoint Catherine Wilkinson to fill the vacancy on the District 41 board.
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Escalante, second by Mr. Elger. Roll call, please.
Mr. Botensky?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Glass?
As the outgoing member of the board, I am abstaining from this vote as well. Okay, moving on. The superintendent's report.
First thing I have is the enrollment report. It continues to be stable as it has the last few months. I'm going to ask Jack Hayes and Bob to come up to give us a report, the construction budget update and progress report. Jack, there you are. Not sure who is it all Jack?
All Jack.
Okay, Jack.
Hi, Jack. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, Jack.
So I'm here with our inaugural construction project status report, since we're actually doing some work now. And we'll be back every month to make sure that you're updated on the status. So you should have received in your board packet a two-page narrative update that kind of lists out the activities by school. And work has started in earnest at Franklin with site utility work and the collection of a great deal of spoils, which are soil that has been removed from utility work and stored on site, which will be going to Churchill now that school is winding down and we can get to start site work there, where we have a temporary construction access road in progress. We've also started work at Lincoln with the preparation of the area in the back of the school for the relocation of the molds from the west side to the north side. And then looking out over the next 30 days, by school, Franklin will be digging foundations and pouring concrete for the footings and foundation walls for the addition. We will be relocating the mobiles at Lincoln to the new location on the north side of the building. At Forest Glen, we'll be relocating the mobiles there further away from the building to allow for site utility work as well as the construction of the addition starting next spring. And at Churchill, we will be doing the underground stormwater detention work on the north grass area. So that's what's going to be happening over the next 30 days. Make sure. Oh, also at Lincoln, one of the important things is when the mobiles are moved, we will then be able to relocate the underground utilities, ComEd and AT&T, which are always long lead items, hard to coordinate. We have a date set, I believe it's June 23rd. That's not right.
June 16th.
So it's going to be happening on a date scheduled in June, which is good. We don't want to miss that date because that messes everything up. There's been no contract or bidding work in the last 30 days. The next major push on bidding will be the buildings for Forest Glen and for Churchill, which will probably occur later this summer. project is on schedule, 30 days in, so that's a good start. We're on budget and actually have accumulated more contingency since the last financial report that you received in March. So that's the second part of the report, which is the budget status. You should have a one-page narrative, I believe it is, and a two-page spreadsheet with updated numbers. The major change in the numbers that you, from what you saw back in March, was that there was scope of work in the March update that was in the soft cost category, which primarily revolved around the mobiles and around roof work that was that's being actually funded from other sources, not through the bond proceeds, but it's falling under our contract. So what I did is I moved those dollars from soft costs up into hard costs because from our standpoint, it all falls under our responsibility. So so the cost of the hard costs went up almost $600,000 or in that range, but all of that money lived in the soft cost dollars. So basically, the report is it's a cost-neutral report. It's the exact same cost as it was back in March, and we've accumulated additional contingency of around $20,000 or so. So we have more contingency. The job's on budget, and we've bought about $6 million worth of construction so far. You've bought about $6 million worth of construction so far and you've committed the district to. With the remaining work to be the buildings at Forest Glen and Churchill, and then some additional site work at Churchill, and then miscellaneous trades here and there. So, any questions?
I got to set into finance tonight just to update on the budget, but then also I got to hear Jack's presentation, and the committee was unanimous in support of the update format, the data, so this is important for us. We also made the point, Patrick made the point of wanting to get this information out to the public so that we can keep an ongoing trajectory for people and how it's moving. So the suggestion was made to build a under construction part of our website link so that folks could go on for their schools, which is a great idea. So I'll do that.
And I think a couple other things we added were that even though we're not meeting in July and August, or we don't have any late August, we will. That will be when most of this construction is occurring, so Jax will give us updates on an ongoing basis through the summer months, which will then go, hopefully, to your idea, Patrick, of uploading it so that all our stakeholders can see what is happening throughout the summer months. And I'd just like to add one other comment, because when you throw the word soft cost out there and you move it to hard cost, it's awful confusing. But it's the other expenses items that really aren't traditional soft costs that just the district had the responsibility of doing, but we found out it's better for various reasons that it falls under your contract. So they move up to year end of what we call the hard cost items. I just don't want to use that soft cost. It's not traditional soft cost items.
Sure. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Jack? Okay.
Thanks. Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it.
I probably won't see you again, so congratulations.
Thank you. It's
been nice getting to know you a little bit.
You too. Thanks again.
What did you say?
We're here until 2.
I'm going to try to cut that a little shorter.
Well, the air conditioning won't.
I know. Good Lord. Is it on now?
We'll kick on until next morning.
Yeah. The next piece is our problem-based learning training update. We're excited to be kicking off the trainings for our teachers starting the week of June 23rd. June 23rd and 24th are coaches, all coaches, the literacy coaches and others are going to be welcome to a PBL training specifically for coaches. And then after that, we're going to have a three-day training for teachers. We have three different sessions for our teachers, one in June, one at the beginning of August, and then one during institute days. We want to make sure that our teachers are given some flexibility on when to choose the date and the time. But I'm going to hand it over to Karen for a second just to kind of talk briefly about, you know, what do those three days for the teachers look like?
Well, and we'll finalize the plan tomorrow in that, but the key things that I shared with the teachers is that they will actually experience a field experience of a PBL. So they'll walk them through that personal experience, and they're going to choose forest preserves on that first day in the afternoon. So that they'll, and it'll be an environmental ecology kind of PBL. So they kind of know what it feels like, looks like, sounds like, type thing. And then by the end of the 3 days, they will have developed their first PBL. So they'll walk out of there with those plans fairly solid.
Yeah.
Room for kind of to negotiate some of that only because not all of their teenage years I sent the first email today, kind of come prepared, and I had a lot of response back from teachers. Like, sound very cool, very excited.
It's just important to understand what the kids are going to be going through, because we won't be taking field trips, and I know it's semantics at times, but for us, it's really not. It is a field experience. It's purposeful. It's why we're going here. We don't go to the zoo just to do the normal zoo trip that all the other kids are doing. We're there for a very specific purpose. We're studying the problem that's there. We're going to be going to these forest preserves for a very specific problem so people can understand what's occurring, whatever their topic is. And I already know what the topic is yet. They'll finalize that piece tomorrow, but we're excited about it. But with that, with any trainings, as I've said before, there is a cost, and there is a significant cost with this. It's $17,000 for costs that will be paid over two fiscal years because of the June and the July, or the two August dates. But these are going to be paid out of Karen's budget, a pre-approved budget that's aligned to this type of work. Very excited about it. Excited about the opportunities that we're going to give teachers that hands-on experience to understand fully what these PBLs are. We've seen a number of them taking off. There was no expectation this year for PBLs, and we're seeing teachers engaging them like we would never have expected. The results coming out, we had an opportunity, Dean and I, to hear from Katie McCluskey, who works with our ELL students and our ESL teachers, and she was just blown away at the experience that occurred during a panel discussion where afterwards the teachers gave feedback, the panel gave feedback to the teachers, and the teacher was just moved. She was literally moved to tears saying, it changed my belief about some of our kids. That I had this young man at times really struggled with many things, and in this situation he just stepped up and he was the leader. It was a great testimonial. It comes directly from the teachers.
Yeah, she we met her pretty much right after the PBL, and she was at first she was speechless, and then she started to tell us, and then she became very non-speechless. But she went on in great detail about what the effect the PBL was and how the kids reacted and changed, and was so impressed with the way they got dressed up, the way they addressed the board, you know, mm-hmm. that they were going in front of, and sort of some of the protocol that they did, and she really thought it was an amazing event. So,
yeah. FGM reached out, and they were an expert panel. They helped Franklin talk about, you know, the best place for an outdoor educational setting, and the students were solving those problems. They were using their math, their critical thinking to solve the problems, but FGM was there to have those hard conversations with kids about what is it you need to really think about. You can't just do anything and everything you want. What does it look like? So it was good. It's a substantial amount of money, but it's an amount of money that I believe will make a difference for our teachers early on and ongoing in the future.
These are budgeted numbers that you provided us. They're not actuals. The airfare's not paid for.
No, these are actuals. I sent you...
Even your hotel rooms are... Actual.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I sent you...
The only estimates were around gas and tolls.
Yeah.
So this will be made public, the form that we created in policy committee regarding pre...
Pre-approved expenses.
Yep. So that will be...
good. I hope we can shop better for hotel costs. I just think that you can do better.
Your area? We've looked at it a number of places, and we want them close to us.
What's close to us?
You got close to us?
Yeah, what's the... I'm just wondering.
Crown Plaza. You've got the Hyatt on the other end of town. And now I'm way outside of my realm of knowledge of hotels.
A lot of rooms.
Well, we talk a lot about professional development. I know that there's this kind of two sides of it is the challenge of having teachers do the professional development during the school year. So the fact that this is provided in the summertime. And then, Carol, what did you say the numbers were that we've had registered?
Oh.
We're up to about 247. Yeah.
And 300 will, a little over 300 will participate.
Yeah.
Is that right, Lori?
Yeah.
A little under 300.
And for everybody, that percentage is how many of the whole teacher? Is that 50%?
That's everyone.
There's 260.
And then we have probably about 20 administrators.
So we pretty much have 100% participation.
That's our expectation. Everyone participates. And that's why there's three different sections. If you can't do the summer, then you would do the institute days.
What is the summer percentage?
Oh.
I have about 75 for the June dates. And the last time when I counted, there was about 65 for the first set of August.
So at this point, we're at 50% participation for the summer dates, roughly. Okay. It's 130.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next one is the Triple I Conference. I just need to hear from board members because it's getting ready to start again. I need to hear from board members a consensus if I can direct Maureen to start making the registrations. Registration fee for the conference is, if we do pre-registration, it is $405 per person. Estimate what they gave to us on hotels. It's about $185 a night hotel. So I just need to hear from the board if that's a direction.
It's always the same weekend.
I believe so.
But, pretty close, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it the weekend before Thanksgiving?
Yeah, the weekend before Thanksgiving.
So
is that what it is, Maureen? So I just need to...
I'm the hotel guy, right?
Okay, why don't you start?
I asked the hotel question.
I know.
So I'm hotels.com. I am amazed that it's $184 downtown and we're paying $164.
But it's a convention rate.
I know, but I got to tell you, those hotel prices, they're too expensive
in
this area. But I think the conference, if you're going to attend it, you need to attend it. You need to go to it. You got to commit your time if you're going to have the district commit its money.
Mm-hmm.
That's simple, and I think that's what we have to do. As far as hotel stays, I don't see the need for the district to pay for the board members to be down there. And as far as staff, I'm willing to listen to your recommendation based on that and the rationale.
Okay.
Joe, are you just kind of curious on your first point? Are you suggesting people have gone and not participated?
I'm saying if we go, we have to participate.
But are you suggesting that's not the case?
No, I think what I said was if you go, you have to participate.
I didn't know if you had a previous history that you were...
No,
well, you just went last year.
I went last year. I participated.
Yeah, we all participated.
Yeah. So if you go, you need to participate. That's all I'm saying. I think that's a fair statement.
Any other direction for me?
I think it's
important. It's like my Florida friend.
We talked about this last year, and it's a really valuable opportunity because it gives us a chance to kind of divide and conquer in terms of education sessions, especially ones that have meaning around what we're working on. But it's also an opportunity to problem solve and talk with other board members from around the state and see what they're working on, what their struggles are. It's just, I think, in general, a really valuable time for the board.
And I would jump right on and agree that I think we should go ahead and register. If board members are interested in going, I certainly am interested in going. We should register for the event. I'd echo what Joe said. We might want to look at the way we do it and see if we want to stay down there. We can stay down there on our own dime, or we can, come back and forth because
I think that the community is asking for that, and I see no point in that making that overture.
Okay.
So we'll just.
So I'm assuming that what I'm hearing.
So check your calendars and just confirm with Maureen.
Yep.
I mean, well, to kind of facilitate a little bit, Maureen doesn't have to know by tomorrow.
What,
right?
What dates are they, so we can be clear?
So we can be clear.
Or do you need, when do you need to know to pre-register?
What is more important, and what would probably be, overnight for the
accommodation? Yeah.
Registration? You haven't
started. Right. So correct. We can have her register for overnight, and we can pay for it ourselves.
Yes.
That way we get the rack rate for the conference.
And what are the dates? Do you know the dates?
I do. It's somewhere in this packet of
stuff. Somewhere in the packet?
Yeah.
Why don't you just send out the dates to us so that we can get the dates and make sure that
Thursday,
the weekend
the 20th, Friday the 21st, Saturday the 22nd, Sunday the 23rd.
So the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Yep. November 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd.
Thursday?
They have a pre-conference.
Yep. Okay, one more.
We have one more announcing the hire of our communications, our chief communications officer, Erica Kreibel. We're pleased to introduce Erica as the chief communications officer for District 41. Erica comes to District 41 from Northeastern Illinois University, where she has spent the last 14 years. During her tenure at Northeastern, Erica served as the Director of Media Relations, Director of Public Relations, Assistant Vice President for Marketing and Public Relations, and most recently as Chief Communications Officer and Director of University Outreach. Her responsibilities include developing communication and outreach strategy, serving as a liaison to community surrounding Northeastern, serving as the spokesperson for the university, creating and overseeing communications, including social media, and providing counsel to the president. Erica recently led the university-wide website redesign project and steering committee from start to finish. This project required cooperation and coordination with all departments within the university. In addition to her work on the website redesign, she created and implemented the Northeastern Neighborhood Network, a community advisory group consisting of over 15 community leaders who meet to share information and discuss community concerns. She has experience with crisis management, the development of safety plans, and with Freedom of Information Act requests. In 2011, Erica received the Partnership Award from Telemundo for her work on the series Education Alliance, a series featuring numerous Northeastern students, faculty, staff, and alumni. The series provided Latino families with a more in-depth view of the educational landscape in the United States and aired in Chicago and Washington, D.C. Prior to work at Northeastern, Erica spent a year at Millikan University as the Media Relations Coordinator. Erica holds a Bachelor's of Art in Communication and Public Relations from Millikan University, a Master's of Arts degree in Communications, Media, and Theater, and is a proud graduate of Glenbard West. Erica's reputation as an effective communicator, her success with the community engagement, and experience with social media and website development will be an asset to District 41. Erica replaces Julie Worthen, Director of Communication and Grants, who will be retiring June 30th, 2014, after 12 successful years in District 41. Through the interview process, it was abundantly clear that Erica was the candidate, the leading candidate from the beginning. She was thoughtful, articulate, well-rounded, had a number of years of experiences in this role. At the university level, one of the things that connected us to her was her work with the community. That was a focal point of her conversations with us, engaging the community. As we've heard from the board, as we've heard from the community members, we will continue to make that a priority of our work, and Erica will continue to support us in that area.
Okay.
I am done.
Great.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm sure she's brilliant.
She's a good woman. A really good person.
Her name?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Right. I was thinking because she graduated from West.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, moving on to board reports. Anything the board members are supposed to share at this time?
I had a Team 21 meeting, and we met on, is it May 1st? No, end of May. I'm looking at the minutes. And we had a pretty focused agenda. The most important thing we did, actually it was just this past week, was do a review of the 21st century teaching and learning document, which was referred to in the report that Paul and Brian did. And it's a 12-page document that lays out the District 41 21st Century Learning Model. Really well done. I'm not going to do it justice to explain it, but the team kind of scrolled through it on our smartboard, and it is going to be a great document for guidance for certainly teachers, obviously, who've had voice in building it, but also parents. I made asked the question, is this something that we should push up even to District 87 so that they can see what we're doing in terms of our modeling and can have that information. So it's going to be a great tool, and a great tool for parents to better understand how everything connects and what that work is. So really well done. A summer book club for teachers, and several titles that were suggested. And last thing is we have a new member, Amy Watroba, resigned from Team 21, some changes in her work. I want to, for the record, thank her publicly for her work. She and I were able to do a lot of the summer meetings together last year. And her replacement is also from Forest Glen, Shana Frederick, who actually just retired last year, stopped out of teaching last year in District 204, high school teacher, English. And so she brings a lot of, identification with the work that we're doing, and a lot of energy. So I was thrilled to meet her and have her join Team 21. So we have another parent on it. Len is this Wednesday, kind of an odd day. The Legislative Education Network of DuPage, and it's going to be in Bloomingdale School District 16 at 8 o'clock in Bloomingdale. So I know that we all get the link stuff, so you all have that information, but it'll be an interesting meeting kind of based on what Finance Committee was talking about in terms of the state of Illinois decisions around funding and, you know, their budget and, you know, what came out of the General Assembly as they closed for the session. So I'll go to that and I can report back on that. And then there was a really interesting article, and I didn't do a download of it, but it was in the Herald on Sunday. And District 203 is doing a test of the new teacher appraisals. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but I'm sure we've got a link, you know, coming up this coming week with our articles. But it's a really interesting approach that we've actually taken before in some cases, too, where 30 teachers at the 12 schools are going to be evaluated partially based on student growth, because, again, that's where the PARA, the mm-hmm. you know, state law, went. So I think it'd be interesting to follow up with them. And the president of their Naperville Unit Education Association, like Ian Mark Bailey, he was at a meeting we were at. I almost think it was at the one that we were at for dinner. His name sounds familiar, like we either sat with him or whatever. But I think it's worth reaching out to that school district and find out how they're doing it and looking at their measure. Again, not for use this year, but to test how those four quadrants and their evaluation along with student growth is going to match up. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then, Paul, I was wondering, not tonight, but if we could have an update on the field testing for PARC, because I know that we did it, and I'd like to hear how it went. You know, there were some teachers at Churchill who were talking about it at the summer send-off, and not in any detail, but I think it's a good update.
I'll make sure you have that.
Yes.
To parlay our finances conversation, when do you want it, Erica?
Oh, say it again.
When do you want that update?
Oh, the update.
June 23rd?
June 23rd would be fine. But the first meeting in August, just to see how that's going to start to loop into the fall, might even be better just so it's closer. But I know the teachers were doing some kind of summary you know, in terms of
just
the
written
one.
Just in case anybody
one,
asks you,
the
you
online.
Can say,
exactly, yeah, what's happened, right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, any other reports? Finance?
Take it to finance real quick. We had a couple different items we talked about. We talked about the intergovernmental agreement for the Spalding site between 41 and 87. We talked about the Hadley proposed breakfast program. We talked about the need to replace a air conditioning unit at Lincoln School. And then we talked about the construction budget, a little bit more detail than the report here at the board. And then we spent a lot of time going over the tentative budget.
Okay. Thank you, Drew. Any other reports? Okay, just very quickly today, I spent the day volunteering at Lincoln's Olympic Day, and it was a kindergarten through fifth grade event, and I could tell you the kids were very excited, as they are every year. They have a little paper medal around their neck, and they go from event to event, and it was very exciting and very good to see that the kids actually enjoy things that are planned for them. So Janet Morris, I know, was the chairman, but there was many, many other volunteers and co-workers that helped out, so I want to give a shout-out to them. And there was also the annual fifth grade parent versus kids kind of sack race, and there was the ever-popular plate dance to end the day. And if you haven't seen the plate dance at Lincoln, you got to go see it. It's hard to describe it. The kids love it. So, again, thanks to all the volunteers that made that possible every year. Okay, so moving on to the remaining discussion items. The 2013-2014 amended budget. Bob, I think you're going to...
Yeah.
I'm going to step out for just a minute. So, John, you can take care
of it. Sure. So this is... obviously, we passed the budget last August in recognition of certain things that occurred over the past year. In particular, we fast-tracked the elementary school addition so we could begin building them this year. So we put out a $7 million borrowing program and committed $1 million in additional, approximately $1 million in additional funding for the services that we needed to bring this proposal for the elementary school additions forward. So those were my primary reasons for wanting to file an amended budget, and those numbers are recognized in the amended budget that you have before you this week.
Board discussion?
No, it's straightforward.
Yeah.
It's only because of the
yes.
funding for that.
Yeah, I would not have wouldn't have proposed an amended budget had we not moved forward with the elementary yeah. school additions.
Yep. Okay, Bob, the chiller replacement at Lincoln?
Sure. We turned on the air conditioning about a month ago at Lincoln and immediately recognized that we have an issue there. There are two units in this chiller unit itself, and one of them is down, down completely down. We had a preliminary cost estimate for repairs of $58,000. Because of the sheer size of the dollar amount that we're referring to. I asked Director of Buildings and Grounds, Dave Scarmaro, to go out and give me some pricing in terms of what this may cost to replace the entire unit. Any estimates that we have so far for the cost of the equipment as well as the equipment rental, meaning crane rental and installation cost, will run us approximately $42,000. Currently, the unit itself, we do have air conditioning at Lincoln, but you're running on one unit, and should that go down, they do not have air conditioning. So we're proposing that we head it into Finance Committee earlier this evening. We wanted you to discuss the ability for us to go out to bid, and then we would, this meeting this evening, and then we would propose that we bring it back to the board, allowing us to go out to bid on the 23rd of June. My intention is to fast-track this, get it put out there, get it out for bid, And then, because I can't start the beginning of school, we can't start the beginning of school with the unreliability of just how long this unit could last. That goes down, we do not have air in this building. So that is my proposal that we'll discuss it this evening. We'll have to bid in late June, and I've got to have it installed first to second week of August at the latest.
So it's less expensive to replace it than it is to repair it?
Yeah. It turns out that's correct.
An old system.
That system is 16 years old. It had it when it was originally installed. They told me that the expected life was 20 years. It obviously didn't hit that. We're at 16 years. And because of the age of the unit and the fact that it actually cost more to have it repaired versus replaced, that's the reason for my recommendation.
Do we have summer programs in Lincoln this summer?
No. Everything is done because of the building addition. Okay. And there will be
all staff will be out of the building on what day?
We're asking that the teachers be finished up by Friday because my staff is moving in there Saturday. Hopefully they don't have to work Father's Day Sunday. But our plans are to get everything moved and ready for construction work that's really due to start in earnest next Monday.
Okay, any other questions for Bob? I see we've moved ahead in the discussions.
One of the things we talked about in Finance Committee that I felt compelled to recommend is that we have, and we talked to Jack, inspections on all our units, all our HVAC units. We should have them in the past, and we need to have them going forward. I think we settled on this. I listened to Jack's recommendation to a semi-annually as opposed to quarterly, which is what I first recommended. But I think those inspections don't necessarily have to be by outside third parties, but we need to get a good inspection sheet, checklist, along with pictures so that we are up. These are roof-mounted. We're on the roof. We're checking them because that's the best way to keep them in good order, not finding problems when you turn them on, but actually do it in an ongoing basis. It should be easy with a new unit, but you still have to be up there. In the spring and the fall is what Jack recommended, and I concur with that.
Mm-hmm. I think Jack could also probably give us a good template to use.
He could give us a great template.
So,
they're out there.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. Any other questions or comments here? So this is coming back for action on the 23rd, I think.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So the Hadley Junior High proposed breakfast program.
So, as you know, a couple of years ago, we moved our food service program to partner with District 15. And last year, we introduced a hot lunch program at the elementary level. Earlier this year, we rolled out the breakfast program at Churchill because of changing demographics. As a participating member in the National School Lunch Program as well as breakfast program, when a building's low-income population exceeds 40%, you're required to actually offer a breakfast program. Now, that's not what's happening at Hadley, but we do know that the kids are being offered a program in Churchill currently. There are changing demographics that are occurring at Lincoln. We think it only may be a matter of time and in the best interest of children, students, that we would introduce this program at this time. I've asked District 15 to prepare or just give me some cost analysis in terms of what the expected additional cost would be. So it would be one person, 2 hours per day, for an estimated cost of $4,178 per year. $4,178 approximately. And
so we anticipate this being a cost-neutral program.
Break-even program.
Yes, that is
yeah.
Break-even.
Thank you.
Why the time of open at 8:15 and then close at 8:30? So kids come in starting at 8:15, they can grab breakfast. And is that enough time?
You know, this is on the recommendation that came to me from District 15 after they met with the building administration at Hadley. I'm flexible on this. I'm just bringing the recommendation.
In Churchill, what are we doing currently in Churchill?
You know, it's obviously a little later in the day, in the morning, because the bus
is still 15 minutes. 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty fast paced.
Pretty quick.
Because
and
kids
grab and go.
And,
yes.
And I guess the question is, since we have it, and it's kind of pilot tested.
100.
What's the feedback we're receiving? Are we seeing good feedback, bad feedback? Is that too much time? Is it too little time? Obviously, it's not too much time, but where does it fall in?
So kids are bringing, it's not, I think, the traditional breakfast program where kids sit in the cafeteria and eat. They're walking through.
That's not what we're doing at Churchill
either, right? No. So we're walking.
Let me ask the question.
I think I understand. I'm just giving some context to it. So what we have in Churchill, it sets up in the hallway. So as kids are coming in, they come in, they've got their little card in their pocket, up in a pocket in the walls, and they walk through, give their card to one of the individuals who are overseeing the program, and they walk through and grab their milk, grab their fruit, grab their breakfast, and then they just keep on moving down the hallway to their classroom. I believe Churchill, Churchill, Hadley would be similar in nature. That's why it's a pretty condensed time frame for them to be able to walk through, get it. At Churchill currently, there's 120 students who are participating. It started fairly small, but then just kept growing and growing. I've seen it a couple days. It's really an impressive operation that they've got going on there.
Well, if it's growing, that's a good sign because people are utilizing it.
Right.
Yeah.
And it isn't going down.
It's already a cost neutral program. You know, I know when we spoke about it at the beginning of the year, we weren't sure where that was going to come in at. But it's exceeding expectations because of the number of kids who are participating in the program.
The difference, though, at Churchill, we got to buy equipment to start the program, whereas here we have the equipment.
Yes, so we have our own kitchen. We have everything within Hadley. So the cost, as you see on there, it's the human resources as opposed to the projections you saw last year at this time for Churchill.
Did Steve come to you or Bob and say, we feel like we need this, the kids are, we're hearing from teachers that the kids are
so we met like Karen, I mean it was months ago when we were over at Hadley talking about this. We had Sandy join us, who oversees the lunch and breakfast programs, and we just started talking about exactly what Bob said. We have the infusion of our kids coming from Churchill and Lincoln and throughout the entire district to Hadley. Why don't we have a breakfast program? We understand the importance of food for our kids in the morning. And then you think about junior high, middle-aged kids who oftentimes just run out of the house, who don't have anything. And it's open to any kid. It's open to anybody to participate in the program. Generally, at the middle school level, they become very successful over time. Early on, it takes a little while to gain interest, but then it takes off because kids are like, this is what I get for, you know, whatever amount of money. And they're bringing it. They're feeling better about themselves. They're eating. They're more prepared to learn in that environment. Anything I'm missing, Lori, Karen, on this piece?
No, I mean, Karen has expressed some concern that they know there's kids who haven't had breakfast and are hungry, and
thank
the social worker have, you know, will grab granola bars and things like that. So there's been a need for kids that they're recognized with those that.
Yeah, that's right, because they have quite a large food cabinet that they staff themselves and ensure that kids have something.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we'll come back on the 24th.
You will.
And it's not a requirement.
No.
It's an ask. It's a want.
It's a want, yeah. Well, yep. And maybe a need.
I don't know why a need.
Well, that's why I asked the question. And it's, you know, as our kids migrate up through the school, their economic situation doesn't necessarily change just because they go from fifth grade to sixth grade. Right? So if the teachers are seeing that the need and they have gone to the principal, then, you know, it seems to me that we need to listen to it.
Yeah, but I think in Churchill, it was a requirement, and we need to do it. Federal regulations required it. My concern is we're instituting a program that's not needed, wanted. We're going to institutionalize this, and we say it's budget neutral now. We ask some finance questions on how this is going to get paid for and if grants and funds get cut. Once you start feeding a kid breakfast in 3 years, if grants get cut, or what are we going to say? We're going to cut the breakfast? We're going to take food out of their mouths? That's what we're going to hear. So are you setting yourself up for bad news by doing something that, you know, again, I'm not trying to say let's starve kids here. What I'm saying is we've institutionalized something that we're not required to do, and we do a lot of things that we're not required to do. But I understand it's cost neutral, but I don't want to, right now, until I think about it, because it just got brought up tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I would be voting no on this one.
From my perspective, the cost benefit far outweighs $4,500. For me, it's not even in that realm, because when you say want versus need, it's different for every child. There may very well be a need to be fed by certain kids. It may not be across the board, but there is a need for some children in our community to be fed. That's just the reality of who our district is.
It's just not a requirement.
It's not, and I absolutely agree with Patrick. It's not a requirement.
To your point, it could become that if we hit same as 40%, right?
But it's cost neutral, because even though it costs $4,100, you're still proposing, you're presenting it as a...
The overall program is cost neutral.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So this $4,100 will get eaten in the profit or the changes of expenses in the other parts of this program.
Correct.
Otherwise, it can't be cost neutral. So it must have be. You must be getting it some way to be cost neutral.
I think the
because then really it's not cost. I mean, you're lowering the budget by $4,100. So to me, this is just a $4,100 expense. Let's call it what it is.
Well, that's what he has here. It is.
No, but then it's not cost neutral.
But I think the benefits.
Because kids are paying for
yeah.
for
yeah.
the
so
lunches. Right.
So you are generating enough revenue.
You're did not to break even.
Well, that's what I asked.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, I thought I apologize.
I didn't understand it when you say it's mm-hmm. There is no cost because you're generating revenue.
Yeah, okay. That's a better way of saying it. I appreciate it. It's good to have the clarity on it.
But just to Patrick's point, I think. If we're the program, all of a sudden, no longer cost neutral, that is, that we would, the state or the feds would cut the program, instead of $4,500, it could be $300,000 or $400,000.
I don't know any of those numbers.
I missed this financially, but I'm lost on it, so I apologize. Because if you're generating revenues from the students...
You're generating revenues by the students, but you're subsidized by federal and state grants.
So how much is the subsidization?
Those are the questions that we asked. Get gutted...
Sorry,
right?
I missed this part.
$250.
I know, I was. I was on time on my
block. Right. So if those grants get gutted, are we going to say we're going to stop
wasn't answered. The grant number wasn't answered. Yeah. I got you.
Yeah, we will, right?
Oh,
we certainly take a look at it.
I suppose it has that, has that potential. I would hope that we wouldn't have a district like that. But for Churchill, we start out with lower numbers, and then that's actually generated more revenue than we expected.
But again, we're getting federal funding
To date, we've received almost $260,000 worth of state and federal funding, of which the majority is federal money. Mm-hmm.
And we have not seen a decline in that number.
Not in the federal money.
Not in the federal dollars.
But that's different because you're mandated to do it. So
federal government. I know, but I mean, as you all know, the federal government mandates a lot of things, and they don't pay for it.
No, that one.
So this is one that they come through and they say, "This is what we're paying. This is what we're doing. This is what we expect for our kids."
So, do we have questions for Bob to come back with next week? You gave him some from.
Yeah, we have a couple from finance.
All right.
Okay, so I guess the amended recommendation will come back for action on the June 23rd. Is that appropriate summation of that? Okay, thanks, Bob. All right, upcoming meetings. June 23rd, 2014, Board of Education public hearing on the 2013-2014 amended budget and regular meeting. 7:15 p.m., Central Services Offices. There are no meetings scheduled for the month of July.
So that's moved up to 7:15?
Well, the public hearing on the amended budget is at 7:15. Yep. I'm assuming the regular meeting is 7:30.
Uh-huh.
Okay, just so we're clear. All right. Any other matters to be considered by the board? Okay, public participation. Is anyone present at this time who wishes to address the board?
So, first of all, I think it is really important that the board recognize that we need to provide the least appropriate internet access. We have a library of 20,000 volumes, and the librarian selected all of those. We can pick those websites. For grade school kids provide access to only approved websites, the whitelisting. My research revealed that Sophos was not a major player in the school filtering market. Securely was the one that I was most impressed with when doing my research. I called and talked to the rep from Securely, and Greg said that he was actually going to be in Chicago for a meeting around the 17th. And I would have liked to see a demo. I mentioned that to Mike. He thought that was very preliminary to meet with any other providers. But the problem is that when you've been working with a product, a filtering product, for the last 7 years, and that's your only paradigm, is this is how this works, then you don't really understand all of the other options that are out there. And so I think it's really important to be able to look at other things and realize that whitelisting can be very effective. You can block AdSense. You can block all of these pop-ups that can come up in potentially whitelisted sites. So a lot of the excuses I hear, they're excuses to me. I also investigated NetTracker and iSerio, and both products deliver an industry-leading digital learning resource library with more than 360,000 educator-curated resources, each one tagged, organized, and aligned with state standards and Common Core standards so that teachers, students, and parents can find what they need quickly and safely. These kids, this is the resource that these kids need to use because it will help train them over time, like training wheels on a bike, train them to know what sites to go to rather than using Google. Several DuPage County schools are using this. Bloomingdale, Benjamin 25, 62, 83, 203. I talked to the Regional Board of Education. They're looking at putting in a program for special pricing. We need to realize that there are better solutions out there, and there are a lot of schools. The benchmarking is going to be hard because a lot of schools are not paying attention to this yet. It's new. We see it in the news every other day about sexting and all these other things. So we need to be thoughtful and make sure that we're doing the whitelisting and we're also holding IT accountable to follow up with the industry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anderson.
Thank you. Anyone else? Mrs. Stecker?
Stephanie Clark.
Hi, everyone. A couple of things. One is a comment first on the whole internet issue. And there was a long discussion about the lockdown in schools, which I think is a very important discussion and one to have. And obviously, it gets a large amount of attention from the media when something horrific like that happens in our schools. But I think the reality is, something like that actually happened in our school, hopefully, is very, very slim. But the reality of internet security breaches, I think, probably happen every day. And I think that should be given just as much a serious approach. And I'm not saying it or not, just wanted to draw that analogy. As far as training for the kids, videos, I think it would be just as applicable. What it comes down to, it really, there's kids, they don't always make the best decisions or understand their decisions. And we can protect our kids at home, but when we send them to you or trust in you to help put the rules in place that will protect them. As far as the issue of devices, I realize that some parents may want their kids to have devices in school, but they're going to have to comply with the rules that are set. I have a feeling that we didn't sit down with parents and ask their opinion on if it was okay for kids to wear clothes with guns on them or obscene language. I think we just felt that's not appropriate. We're not going to do that in school. We probably didn't have a meeting to see if every parent in the district was comfortable with it. And in the end, it's your house, District 41, and you have to make the rules for what is best for the district. I have a feeling if a student were to do something inappropriate with their device on school property, that could go to litigation. I have a feeling the lawyers are going to come after the school district, not the parents that send the kid with the device to school. And if it's not as if a parent couldn't get a hold of their child if they were in school. If they had an emergency, I'm sure they could call the school office and get a hold of their child. So, as far as the dashboard, I wanted to comment on that a little bit. It does concern me that we're expecting teachers to police what 28 kids are doing in the classroom. I feel like they should be teaching our children. I know right now for my son in fourth grade, I'm not even 100% sure how much teaching is going on in his STEAM class because they're doing menus now, which actually, according to him, this is a fourth grader, but according to him, they sit on computers all day. They have very limited one-on-one, very limited instruction time with the teacher, and they work through their menus at the pace. And if they have questions, they have to make an appointment with the teacher to even talk to them. So I'm not sure. I'm sure the teachers are busy having appointments or maybe working with small groups. I'm not sure, but their time appears to be stretched in a lot of different areas already, and I don't know that it's realistic to expect them to produce what everyone's doing on their computer.
That's time stuff. So could
okay.
you do so much?
One last quick thing. Just a suggestion, if we're going to give an update on internet, which I think it was great that there was an update, it would be good to have it on the agenda because it was unfortunate. A couple of the parents that spoke about it left before they even heard the update, and I think if it had been on the agenda, they might have stuck around to hear it. So just a suggestion.
You know, I was planning to, but once Mr. Smith did this, just kind of rolled along. No, I appreciate it, though.
The last three board meetings, we said it's important, but it's not really ever been on the agenda, and I think it would be good to call it out.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Anyone else?
So I just want to reiterate what you said, that Stan reassured us several times now that there are, you know, actions to be taken to address the internet safety issues. And I have to say, after hearing the plans and being at the last two board meetings, I really had no greater confidence that some college policies and procedures are really being put in place to protect our children. We've gone to great efforts to try to introduce 21st century learning, and instead of that being the thing that we're known for and going on, we're getting known for porn, and you know, you've heard about all the off task and people concerned about academics, and focus on best utilizing these tools to actually be used for learning. And I would like to recommend, you've heard about different products that are being considered. All I've heard is that we're kind of tweaking what we've always done. And we've put some dashboards out there, so now our busy teachers can kind of scan. Most of them really don't know what they're doing. I talked to a few of the happy teachers. And again, the focus is not on academics. And I think we have an opportunity to be known not only for 21st century learning, but we have an opportunity to partner with others in other districts. And I would like to recommend that we consider an IT consultant who might be able to partner with us to review the current products that are available, protocol, procedures, etc. I recently had an opportunity to speak to the superintendent, Dr. May, in D15, and he gave me several examples of things that they're doing in their district. So they have current policy about technology use. It's updated, communicated, and it's enforced in both the elementary and middle school. Both the parents and the students in Glendale Heights are required to attend a session at school in which a student agreement for internet use is reviewed and signed off. Nothing happens. No laptop is accessed until this is signed off and they go through internet education. And I will also say that the safeguards on there, you can only go through the school portal, whether you're at home, San Francisco, wherever you're at, there's that protection. And as far as the electronic devices, I would agree. I don't understand that your reluctance as far as simply enforcing the policies that we already have in place. Clearly, we heard from the parents communicating tonight that these are not doing anything to support your academic goals, and instead they're serving as huge distractions. No distractions, but inappropriate material.
That's time, Chris. Could you summarize, please?
Well, I guess bottom line is I don't feel assured, and I would like to see more rigorous activities, and I think that we can partner and learn from other schools who have more rigorous activity around internet safety, around policies and procedures for monitoring, and how we enforce it. So in D15, if somebody has a handheld electronic device in the school, in the classroom, they are sent to the principal's office, and their parent has to pick it up. That's
great.
Just one small example.
Well, I appreciate you sharing all that information. I'm sure you'll provide that to Dr. Gordon tomorrow or whatever you find that feasible. But thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
Anyone else?
Yeah, you know, Stephanie Clark pretty much said most of everything that I would like to say. But just as an aside, I was going to talk about the internet safety, and I'll get to that in a second. But the position that got filled, it's very interesting to see that person not even present, whereas I could name one person, and I won't name that person, who's here all the time. The dedication, the concern, and all the communication this person has been doing, and she's been overlooked. For somebody that I don't even know who this person, never heard of her, and I don't know how often does she ever catch her come here. So I'm a little sad to hear that, how we made this election. Anyway, back to the internet thing. I agree, lockdowns are important. That's an important physical safety for our kids, but I also think that it's equally important to have a mental and psychological safety for our kids, and that's why the internet safety measures have to be. We cannot dilly-dally. I said that last time. And Dr. Gorner, with all due respect, please don't delay just making policy. You know, just make it and be done with it. You're not going to lose enrollment. You're not going to have, you know, major outcry. People deal with it and move on. This is not an academic thing. We do not need electronic devices coming from the home. We have electronic devices at the school. Let's use those. Implement all our safety measures through the school, through the district. Forget about the devices from home. Like Stephanie said, they need to reach the kids. Parents, call the school. It's an old-fashioned policy way to do it, but you know what? It still works. It's not outdated. So that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Nita.
Thank you.
Two items. First, I echo Nita's concern. We selected someone to be on the board that I've never seen or heard of. Yet I sit next to someone that's been here for 18 months, so I hope she shares your vision. Secondly, I was happy to see $4,500 discussed tonight for about 15 minutes. When we discussed the PBL for $200,000, we had no discussion. And I hope we're budget neutral. So it's a little concerning for me.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Adjourn to closed session. The board has determined there's a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity, and to discuss the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the school board, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired. May I have a motion to adjourn to close session?
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Kenwood. Second by Mr. Ellis. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Glass?
Yes. Motion carries. The meeting will adjourn to closed session. The time is 10:29. The board will not be taking action when it returns to open session.
Thank you.
Okay, back in open session.